Perfect. Okay, so before we get started, I will know that we do record all of the meetings here. It is a public council, so the recording will be placed on the governor's website. If any of you are familiar with that, the public notice website, it's where we post the agenda for this, as well as any handouts, any material that comes out of it, is all posted online within 3 days of the meeting. So just a word to the wise, don't say something in here that you wouldn't say to anybody in public. So let's be civil, I guess, is the best way to go about that. So welcome to the first meeting of the Private Aquaculture Advisory Council, or PAC, as we sometimes call it. My name is Stacy Coons. I'm the coordinator of the council, so all of you should have received an email from me, and some of you a follow-up phone call, because we got a little confused on what we were doing, but we got that settled out. So I will be probably your point of contact between the division and the committee. I'm in charge of setting up your follow-up meetings, any additional meetings that you want to do, the minutes, all of that kind of stuff comes to me. So if you have any questions on that, feel free to reach out. Email is probably the best way to grab me, but you can call me here at the office as well. So I'm going to pass an agenda around just so everybody's got a brief idea of what we're going to try to cover today. So if you want to take one and pass it. I'm also going to turn some time over right now to our Assistant Director, Rory Reynolds, for some words of encouragement.
Okay. Hi, I'm Rory Reynolds. I am the Assistant Director for Wildlife Resources. And what I'd like to do is just do some introductions and maybe go around the table and each one of you introduce yourselves and just tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, the industry or the interest that you represent, and we'll just start, Lee, we'll start with you.
I'm Lee Rasmussen. I guess I'm the fisherman interest here. I recently finished 6 years on the Blue Ribbon Fisheries Advisory Council. I'm a retired attorney and a retired FBI agent.
We'll just go around the tables.
I'm next?
Yeah.
I'm Dave Danley. I'm a fish biologist, graduate of Utah State University, and I've worked for the last 13 years managing private fisheries and private hunting preserves in Utah.
I'm Mike Ravenberg. We have the Mountain View Trout Farm, just north of Brigham City. Raised live trout for a lot of years. We're now starting a new business that's in the smoked trout meat product. So anyway, that's our interest. It's been good to grow trout and have a good relationship with DWR, Department of Ag and DWR, but for a lot of reasons. So anyway, glad to be here.
I'm Wade Kavner with the Utah Division of Wildlife. I am the program manager for the Fisheries Experiment Station up in Logan. We're in charge of research, fish health, and we also have a fish culture facility up there. I'm also, as far as titles, I'm also the assistant aquatics chief, one of three of us, I guess, that have that title. I'm representing Drew today, who couldn't attend. He's out of town. He should be here in the future. He's the official committee member for representing the division.
I'm James Sayre. I live in Salem, Utah, and I basically just 5 years ago got curious with a project called aquaponics, which is raising food and fish together, and been failing at it ever since.
Oh, come on.
Dan Jenks. I guess I'm representing the private ponds industry. I do property management where I manage, there's four different properties that I manage that have ponds on them. And so I guess I'm representing the private sector of trying to get fish into these ponds as frequently as possible and different kinds of fish. And I've been having problems in getting different fish in, and was talking with Robert, don't know what his last name is. And he advised me, or he asked if he could put my name on this list. So I think that I'm kind of underqualified to listen
to
you guys.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Well, we have one thing in common, that was Robert.
Yeah,
okay. So I'm Mark DeYoung. I just retired as chairman and CEO of Vista Outdoor, which is the largest outdoor recreation company in the world that I founded in 2015. I've served on the board of the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation as chairman, served there for 8 years. I served on the National Shooting Sports Foundation for 8 years. I was the chairman of the Wildlife Management Institute for a few years. And I have a small 3,000-acre ranch up in Morgan County with a pond on it that I wanted to put fish in. And I met a guy named Robert Judd, and here I am. So I'm happy to be here. I think it's a great opportunity. I've learned a lot. I just got my Corps permit issued to me for that trout pond. And look forward to working with all of you to further fishing in the state and management of fish and species in the state, and hopefully proliferation of fish in the state. I learned a lot about that in getting my Corps permit and having my pond examined and going through all of that rigmarole. So it'll be fun to be here and work with you. I'm happy to be able to serve.
My name is Chelsea Crawford. I'm the assistant state vet for Utah. As part of my veterinary education, I completed a fish health certificate program, and I'm representing the Department of Ag.
Barry Pittman, spent 29 years in the military, 10 years with USDA, Vet Services and Food Safety Inspection Service, both. Seen a lot of the fishing industry across the U.S., North Carolina, the Midwest, here, California, and I am the state veterinarian for Utah, and I work for the Department of Agriculture and Food. No marijuana yet.
Like fish veterinarian?
Not specifically. I am the state vet, so I deal with all the regulatory import, export, and all that type of thing. So okay. I don't specialize in fish.
I'm Randy Opplinger. I work for the Division of Wildlife Resources, and I'm a sport fish coordinator, and I oversee basically all the trout program within the state.
Okay, well, go with our attorneys.
My name's Marty Bushman. I'm Assistant Attorney General of the state of Utah, and signed to represent the Division of Wildlife Resources. So we'll be able to, and Greg will introduce himself in a minute, help you guys kind of go along and navigate through some of the legal requirements that we have as a council, public meetings and ethics and all that good stuff, which you'll get a dose of today.
Greg Hansen with the Attorney General's Office, assigned Wildlife Resources.
Good. And we've got guests here, so Neil.
Neil Barker. I own Cold Springs Trout Farm. It's a family-run business for 94 years this year. We raise rainbow trout, brook trout, brown trout, tiger trout, bluegill, and wipers. And at the end of this, you'll either thank me or cuss me, because I was kind of the brainchild that got all this going. I talked to other growers in Colorado, and they have a similar advisory council, and they explained how it worked and the benefits of it. And with that, I brought it and presented, and thankfully, the division and the department liked the idea and felt like there was some value in it, and this has been put together. And so I'm kind of here just to learn how it's going to go, and hopefully it does do what it's supposed to do. It's been very good for the people in Colorado and the industry there. And my sidekick.
I'm Tara Barker, manage Cold Springs Trout Farm. Just heard about the council and I'm excited to see what it is.
Good, welcome, thank you for coming. Stacy, I'll turn it back to you, or do you want to, Ben, you want to introduce yourself just as a...
As a what?
As an observer.
Sorry, I worked for Rory, so I was curious what he was going to say. See how he really feels about me. I'm Ben Nadolski, I'm the legislative liaison for the Division of Wildlife, and I'm also curious to see how the committee works. I'm anxious to see how the first meeting goes.
So this is the inaugural.
This
meeting
is the first.
I didn't
this
know
is
that.
The first meeting.
Also, what's the whole idea behind this meeting? Like, why are we here?
Okay, we'll get to all of that. I think as we go through this, we want to keep this fairly informal. This is an opportunity for everyone to learn. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of questions about, you know, what are the sideboards, what are the things that we need to be focusing on, how we're going to operate, how we're going to make some decisions. Those types of things, what your role is as it relates to the Wildlife Board and to the Department of Agriculture, the Commissioner, and we'll go through all of that. And please, as we go through this, if you have questions, don't hesitate to ask. I mean, this is about getting everyone up to speed so that this council can function. So I'll turn it back over to Stacy, and then we'll just progress down the agenda.
Okay. All right. I'm sure there's going to be lots of questions. So to get some administrative stuff taken care of first, I'm going to pass around. It's just a committee contact list. This is based off the information I received from your nominations. And I think you all know by now that you didn't submit your own nominations. By statute, you were nominated by a group or a representing party. And not always did the information come across correctly. So if you would just find your name on it, make sure I've got a valid email, which I think I do for all of you now, phone number, that kind of thing. If it needs to be fixed, go ahead and write it on it. We'll get that updated. And then I'll get this list out to all of you so that you have correct contact information for each other. The next thing is reimbursements. There are certain things that we can reimburse you for. We can reimburse you for your mileage up here, a hotel if you needed to stay. If your drive is longer than 100 miles one way, you can stay in a hotel the night before the meeting. We'll also reimburse you for that. You do need to have your receipt for that. So in order to claim any reimbursements, I just need your name on here. I need you to tell me what you're claiming. If you stayed at a hotel, name a hotel attached, the receipt. If you stayed with friends, I can reimburse you $25 for choosing a friend's couch instead of the hotel. So you can choose that. Mileage, put in your approximate miles, but give me round trip. So I know you've only made half of it, but give me your miles total, because whatever number you put on here, that's the one I reimburse you for. So if you forget and you do half, you only get paid for half. So keep that in mind. Do your round trip. And then breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you can leave as zero unless you ended up staying overnight. And then I can usually reimburse you for breakfast the next day, depending on how long our meetings go.
There's no obligation to be reimbursed. We can waive that, right?
If you choose not to, just put your name on the top and just write me a little note that says, do not seek reimbursement. And then I have it on file that you've denied it. And we can go from there. Okay. So no, you're not obligated to be reimbursed, but it is an option for you.
Is it just for this specific meeting or something?
It's for every
meeting you fill out.
Yes, you'll see this form quite often.
Okay.
By statute, and I don't know if these guys are going to cover it, you can have up to four meetings, I believe, is what statute has set for you. So today's plan is we are going to have our legal team. Yes.
What'd you just say?
I said today's plan.
We're going to have four meetings today.
Statute allows up to four meetings. But as the committee, you guys will decide how often you want to meet or what you want to meet on. And we'll get to that at the end of the agenda. But we're going to have our legal team go over where your authority lies, what you do have authority over, what you don't, how it works with the Wildlife Board, because you'll be working, your recommendations will be working with them. So we'll kind of cover through that. As you can see through the agenda, once our legal guys are done with your responsibilities, your authority, we will cover Open and Public Meetings Acts. We are an open body, so as you can see, we're open to the public and they will come. Hopefully we'll get a bigger room next time. I apologize, we are pretty squished. We'll also need to elect a chairman and a vice chair, so you may want to be thinking about whether you want to throw your hat into the ring or, I don't know, judge people's questions and answers today about who you want to lead. So keep that in mind, and we'll vote for that towards the end of the meeting. And then we'll wrap up this meeting with a discussion of what future agenda topics you guys would like to have and what you would like your meetings to look for moving forward. Any questions on that? Perfect. The kind of committee I like.
Okay. I'll introduce myself again, Greg Hansen with the Attorney General's Office, and I don't know if just because I was the youngest one in the room here, but I somehow got elected to present the next couple topics. So we'll cover a whole slew of topic areas, and there's a stack of handouts here in the middle that maybe as we go through each slide, if we could hand them out, that way you guys have them.
So they're all
different.
All different.
Yep. So maybe that first top one we'll take first. Yep.
Okay.
So in the legal world, there's sometimes some confusing vocabulary, and maybe we'll just quickly rehash what some of us learned in civics class. The difference between, you know, the Constitution, statutory law, what we call administrative rules or administrative code, and then guidebooks and internal agency policies. So at the top of the hierarchy here is constitution, whether it's state or federal. It's the supreme law of the land, and everything underneath the constitution has to be consistent with those the basic constitutional principles. So below that statute, those are enacted by our state legislature. They are the body that created the Private Aquaculture Committee, and those typically govern various state agencies, both the Department of Ag and Food and the Division of Wildlife. Underneath statutes fall administrative rules, and those are created by each of the respective agencies. So all administrative rules have to be consistent with the statutory authority given to the agency, and those rules govern the respective agencies. They have the force of law, you guys, your role, which we'll get to on the next slide, largely to inform the respective agencies on what those rules should say. Underneath rule, we have guidebooks and proclamations. I don't know if Department of Ag and Food typically issues or publishes those, but the division regularly publishes interpretive manuals that kind of explain to the public what goes into or what's contained in our statutes and rules, and kind of give them more of a day-to-day vocabulary, you know, easier to understand, easier to interpret, and kind of give yearly changes, so season dates, boundaries, things that change more regularly. Lastly, we have policy. That's maybe more of a educational topic, not really a legal topic, but those internal policies govern how agencies operate day to day, kind of more internal guidance for Randy and Drew and Rory, those that are stuck with, you know, work within the agency on how they operate. Less impact on the public and more impact on how agencies get the work done that you guys want them to. So any summary questions? I'll kind of make this less formal, so if you guys have questions, just speak up. And
great. You might, yeah. I mean, add is what this council would deal with primarily are statutes and rules. And so as we use the words, understanding that rules always have to be consistent with statute made by the legislature. And so we have both statutes and some administrative rules that will interplay with the council's advisory.
So our next slide is going to be the authority and role of the Private Aquaculture Committee, and that's that second packet right here. So this is the statute that actually created your working body here, and there's it's just a one-page bill, and we can probably summarize what's on that whole page just in two little paragraphs here. So your guys' main roles are to provide advice and recommendations to the two agencies that are represented, the Department of Agriculture and Food and the Division of Wildlife Resources.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yeah.
So providing advice, what obligation does the organization have to follow the recommendations and advice of the committee?
Both the Department of Ag and Food and the Wildlife Board have to consider the recommendations your council makes. If they decide not to enact or pursue the recommendations that you guys put forth, they have to provide the council a written explanation of why they didn't follow it. But you guys are an advisory committee. You do not have rulemaking authority, but you do have the responsibility in statute to provide advice and recommendations to the bodies that do make those rules. And there are identified topic areas that you're to provide advice and recommendations. So the Department of Ag and Food, it's on the on rules pertaining to the application and renewal of aquaculture facility and fee fishing facility certificate and registrations, and also what to do with the disposal or removal of animals if a COR for one of those facilities has lapsed. For the Wildlife Board, you have to provide recommendations on rules pertaining to private fish ponds, private fish stocking, short-term fishing events, and the allowable species that can be imported and stocked within the state. So those are kind of your two main areas to focus on. The remainder of the statute lays out the composition of the council, who's supposed to be represented on the council, and then there's some reimbursement language that Stacy's gone over as well. So, but that pretty much summarizes your guys' role, authority, purpose.
Can I ask one follow-up question?
Yeah.
How many members of the council are seated on the council?
There's
you have six is a quorum, 10 total?
Yes. Yep. So you'll need 6 members present at a meeting to have a quorum, and a majority vote will carry.
Just one question. Is it limited just to application renewal of that right there in the middle? Is that all that this board can talk about, or can it talk about other issues?
As far as making advice and recommendations to the two agencies, these are the topic areas that the statute covers. If there are other discussion items, I don't know of anything that would preclude you guys from discussing relevant topics. But as far as making advice and recommendations to the Department of Ag and Food and the Division of Wildlife, those are the topic areas that are laid out in the statute.
I just think there may be other items that need to be discussed in the future, and it would be nice to be able to discuss those because this is the prime location to discuss those.
And I don't think there would be anything that would preclude you guys from discussing that, but as far as making a vote and actually bringing a formal recommendation to one of those two bodies, these are the topic areas that you should mainly be focused on. Anything else you...
So I just want to follow up one thing on that.
Yeah.
But is the council prohibited? I mean, I understand what you just said there. I understand the guidelines and the categories which we are to engage and recommend as an advisory board.
Mm-hmm.
But is the advisory board prohibited from making recommendations in adjacent or tangent issues to those? They may be ignored, but are we prohibited from making them?
I think you would want to train cabinet in one of those topic areas. Now, those are pretty broad.
I was going to say, you can put a lot under those.
Yeah. And really, I think you'd... 99% of the time you'd be able to fit relevant topics into one of those areas. If there's something that you guys are concerned about or want to address and you don't feel like they readily fit in one of those topic areas, talk to one of either Marty or I or Rory, and we can figure out what the right step should be.
I guess what seems a little confusing to me, the higher hierarchy two items seem more restrictive than what you have underneath it. Is that the exact wording in statute that you're citing at the higher level?
Maybe I should have set this diagram up a little bit differently. It should actually probably go, these two should be on the same level.
Okay. That makes a big difference. Okay. Yeah, because if those are on the same level, then I think that's a whole different...
Co-equal topic areas, two different state agencies. So Department of Ag and Food is separate from the Division of Wildlife. Those are two co-equal topic areas.
Is this going to be on the website then?
Yes, most definitely.
Maybe you can make that change to that. Because I think it makes a huge difference. If it looks like you've got hierarchy there going with those two specifics, I think we're going to be explaining this a lot, as opposed to if you make that change, then it's like, well, look, anything under private fish docking, private fish pond, allowable species, that's all at the same level of hierarchy. Then I think the questions will really go away. Help us.
Co-equal topic areas.
Okay,
I'll make that note. Thanks for pointing that out.
Thank you.
Yeah, Neil.
Just one last question. Mm-hmm. I can't find that exact wording in the code. Can you show me where that's at?
Yeah, so in subsection 1, A and B. So,
okay, so that's why they're clearly at the same level.
Yeah,
okay.
437.109.1 are the rules or the statute that pertains to application and renewal of fee fishing facilities and aquaculture facilities, certificates of registration. And then B are all the topic areas that the Wildlife Board handles.
And so is the permit that you're talking about, is that the core application?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And how often does that have to be renewed? Every year or every 5 years or 10 years?
So, Randy, you may.
I can't speak to the Department of Agriculture.
No, but for Division of Wildlife.
For any pond, it's 5 years now.
So every 5 years you got to renew a license. That costs what?
I don't know the cost off the top of my head.
$35 or something, or $100, $5,000.
I think it's $20.
Oh, okay. I just did
all right,
it's
that's
like
all
$20.
Okay. Yeah, I don't see nothing unreasonable there.
Okay, we'll make that note in the minutes. And yeah, thanks for pointing that out. Okay. The majority of our public meetings, we typically try and follow Robert's Rules of Order, and it's a general recommendation. There's nothing in our in the statute that would bind you to strictly following Robert's Rules of Order, but it's a good way to kind of manage a public meeting. And so here's some a guidance document that should give a kind of a general summary of how public meetings typically flow. So at the end of today's meeting, we'll elect or appoint a chairman. And the chairman will first call the meeting to order. We'll have an established agenda that's published on our public meetings website, and just work our way through the agenda top to bottom. One of the biggest hurdles or biggest things to watch out for if you're a chairman running the meeting is to only consider topics that are on the agenda. I know sometimes there's some issues that come up in the middle of a meeting, or you have things that you want to address in the category of other business, and really try and avoid that. If you have something you want to discuss at the meeting, make sure it makes it on the agenda. And the chairman should stick pretty closely to what's on that agenda. On that first agenda item, we'll first entertain questions from the council, and then questions from the public, any public that's attending. Next, you go to comments and statements from the council and public, respectively, and be pretty strict about trying to cabin those areas. So questions come up during the question time, and comments come up during the comment time. We don't want to have those bleed back and forth. That will help your meeting move forward. You'll go from one category, one topic area to the next much more smoothly. At the end of the meeting, or after you've gone through questions and comments, you'll take a motion and a second and hold a vote on each topic. The motion must be seconded before you move forward, and if it's not seconded, it dies for lack of a second. After you have a motion and a second, you can discuss the motion further, but then you undertake a vote and we move to the next agenda item. If you're the chairman, this will become much more important, and we can help you work through or practice as you get that role. So any other questions?
Is in other meetings like this, do they try to have the agenda for the next meeting generated at the end of the meeting? How's that typically, as opposed to the day before, you're still entertaining emails and things like that? How's that typically done?
That's a good question, and I think it depends on the body. Oh. So our wildlife board has been around a long time, and you kind of know certain times of the year which topics are going to come up. Stacy's done a pretty good job of creating a little bit of routine there. Other bodies, you know, one being the Fish Health Policy Board, those from meeting to meeting, those agenda items and topics are kind of put together. I wouldn't want to say the day before the meeting, because we got to get it posted in time to meet our Open and Public Meetings Act requirements, but I think you guys get to create how you want this council to operate, so long as you're operating within the bounds of the statute.
Don't you typically establish a window for input? I mean, typically there's a window. And they'll say, if you want something on the agenda, provide your input in that window by April 15th, because our meeting is May 15th. That's typical, isn't it?
And I think you guys can run this council and create those expectations as you see fit.
So are we talking like if you want to say something, you need to say it ahead of time before you go to the meeting?
No, it just needs to be on the agenda. So if you're a topic that you want to discuss needs to be posted on the agenda.
Oh, okay.
So that people can be aware, the public can be aware that that item will be discussed at that particular meeting.
Okay. But don't you also have, I mean, in the governance of the council, don't you also want those comments, inputs, and the theme behind that agenda item presented to the council in advance of the meeting? If not, everybody shows up to the council completely cold and it's not effective. So I would suggest we'll want to govern this council so that if you have an item you want on the agenda, it is presented well in advance of the meeting, and the basis of your item is delivered to the council members in advance of the meeting.
Yeah, that's basically why I asked the question.
So I got two-headed fish. Let's put that on the agenda before we come, right?
Well, yeah, but to give it its due so that everybody coming to the meeting kind of has a little bit of background on it, so it's just not a cold.
Yeah, right.
And we have to take a lot of time to reinvent.
Bring your fish with you. We want to
reinvent
see
what the background of this is and everything else. Yeah, okay. All right.
Something else, just so you know, one way that you could get agenda items, if the Division of Wildlife Resources or Wildlife Board makes any proposed amendments to private ponds, private stocking, species of fish, to those rules, they are required to give those proposals to this committee with sufficient time to consider them and then make recommendations back to the Wildlife Board. And the agriculture has the same responsibility as well. If they're proposing amendments to the rules on, you know, COR applications, renewals, or on disposal of fish on facilities that have been lapsed or revoked, then those proposed changes should come to this council before a final decision is made. But you can also come up with ideas of your own.
So, one of the more complex portions of Robert's rules are when you get into amending motions. And this will just be a quick rundown of how you go about amending a motion. First, you get a motion and a second. Any member of the council can then move to amend a motion. But that amendment must be germane to the original motion, so it still has to be on the same topic. You can't amend with a completely different topic area. That amendment then must be seconded by a separate member than the member that made the original motion to amend, and you discuss the amendment. After discussion, you then vote on the amendment itself, not the original motion, but the amended and seconded motion. And if the vote on the amendment fails, you then return to the original motion. Which is then subject to potential amendment again. So this can be a somewhat complex process. And as the chair, make sure you read through this, understand how the amendment process works, because that can get really confusing. And members that do motion for an amendment and it's not properly heard, it kind of get yourself crossways.
Isn't the critical part of this you can't amend a motion that is passed?
That is true.
I mean, motion is made, is seconded, it is not voted nor passed, then you can offer an amendment.
Yep, so you don't address the same topic twice.
Something else is really, these Robert's Rules of Order are not mandatory. If you fail to follow them, doesn't invalidate a vote or anything. They're just used to try to create an orderly process for discussing and processing information.
Correct. The only rule we have on motions is that it's a majority vote.
Yes.
The rest of this is governance, right?
And you got to have a quorum present. So.
Quorum of six.
Yeah.
So don't get too bogged down. The rules, Robert's rules, go into an infinite number of crevices and areas. And don't get too caught up in all of it. Do the best you can. But as you follow them, it should help your meetings proceed more orderly.
Any other questions?
That was Robert Duvall.
Yeah, well, thanks for catching
somebody
me.
Somebody did ask that question.
this is good.
Attorneys aren't supposed to have attorneys are not supposed to have a sense of humor. I'm just telling you.
Bushman put that slide. Our next topic is Public Meetings Act, and if you pass that one around. We mentioned it a lot today, and Stacy is really our public.
Did this really happen?
Open and Public Meetings Act guru.
Utah.
Okay.
But as has been mentioned a few times, you guys are a public body. You're subject to the Open and Public Meetings Act. And really the main purpose behind that that statute is that the public's business gets done in public. So I will say, there is really no reason why this council should ever go into a closed session. We'll try and attend these meetings as often as possible, but really encourage you not to go into closed session and contact us beforehand if you feel that there's some reason to do so. This packet is kind of a general summary of our Open and Public Meetings Act, but
So can I ask a question about that?
Yeah.
So can members of this committee meet in informal settings together off-site and outside an official public meeting?
Yes, in certain circumstances. So if we run through, we'll kind of just go top to bottom through this packet, but and your point, I think, is raised in C.
Okay.
So there are certain instances that don't qualify as a public meeting, but if you don't have a quorum, you got to have a quorum present to have a public meeting. If there's not a quorum present, it doesn't count. The meeting has to actually be formally convened, and it has to be for the purpose of discussing, receiving comments from the public, or acting upon a matter over which the council has authority. So in informal, impromptu, accidental meetings don't count as a public meeting, so long as you guys don't have a quorum present and you don't begin discussing topic areas that the council has authority over. I don't know if you guys are a relatively a tight, connected group, but we do see, in other public body instances, members that interact frequently, and you gotta be real careful about what you discuss when you meet in those instances.
Just to clarify,
yeah.
For example, if we have a Utah aquaculture meeting and we call in the members, the pond owners, the industry people, and we talk about future agenda items, mm-hmm. is there a problem with that? If we discuss those issues, and then those issues are then brought here.
If you remember the council, I would be somewhat cautious in doing that. I don't know if you could hold multiple meetings where you don't end up having a quorum of the council members present at one time. It's a pretty big body, and you need 6 members to have a quorum. So if you only had 5 present at a time, it doesn't qualify as a public meeting then. That would be one way of avoiding a Public Meetings Act concern in that situation.
It just gets kind of dangerous in that if you've got a quorum present, an alternative meeting, you're talking about issues, it gives the appearance that you mm-hmm. might be trying to kind of hold a de facto council meeting. But chance meetings, social meetings, even with a quorum present, aren't going to qualify as an open meeting subject to the Act. But workshops, executive sessions, site visits, traveling tours all do. But the key is the quorum. You're going to have 6 people present, and probably not likely at any of your meetings that you go to, you're going to have 6 members of this council there. Okay. And even if there are, it could be taken care of in a way, I think, that would steer clear of any kind of Open and Public Meeting Act violations, but it just gets a little...
And so if we had 4, you're saying anything less than 6,
you're good.
We're good.
You're good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Is there something better than the number of people, though? I mean, this is kind of, as I look around this table here, there is the Utah Aquaculture Association that has been going on for years and years and years, right? And most... I mean, there's not a lot of growers in Utah anymore. This is kind of the deal. But is there something that would help us out better than just not having 6? Is there something more definitive that would we'd be able to say, hey, this clearly was a meeting of the private industry without trying? I mean,
here's the thing. I mean, if it's an aquaculture meeting. Yeah. Every board member or every council member could be there, and I don't think you're going to have a problem as long as you don't meet individually as that group and start talking, break away from the rest of it. I mean, if you're attending another meeting, I don't think you're ever going to have any problems with this.
As opposed to what, though?
Let's say you go to the aquaculture meeting and you all sit together and then you sit and privately discuss issues that are under jurisdiction of the council. That could be looked at as trying to hold a public meeting.
But in terms of trying to get the agenda items proposed that are a prioritized list rather than wait till you, everyone's here? Is that, because I can see that
who's
being...
Who's going to be, is it the association that's going to be creating a list of agenda, proposed agenda items?
Right, right. Which happens in the industry, right?
The association is doing it,
yeah.
And that's fine. Okay. And that if there are council members that just happen to be in there as part of it, I don't think you're going to have a problem. It's just be careful and don't give the appearance that you're using this council or the association meeting as kind of a ruse to hold your own private little meetings. And I mean, we're really sensitive to this. We just got taken to task, the Department of Natural Resources, by a reporter. Fortunately, not any of Wildlife Resources boards or councils, but some of the other Department of Natural Resources. And people watch this, particularly the media. And closed meetings always draw tons of attention, or secret meetings, anything right. sensational that the media can get a hold of. Right. So,
well, maybe we can come back if we have specific questions.
Yes.
Because the reason why this is kind of significant, I'm holding on to this question, because there's a number of grower, private industry types in around this table that are on this council is a big chunk of those still growing fish, period. Mm-hmm. So to hold this aquaculture, Utah Aquaculture Association meeting means a big number of these cabinet members are there,
yeah.
making up the entire body, frankly. Okay, so if there's something that we can do to make it so it's more transparent, because it's transparency, right?
Yes.
That you want to be able
it's
to say.
Big
and it wasn't rulemaking and it wasn't voting, mm-hmm. correct? If I'm not mistaken. So, okay. I think we did it.
Because
we don't want to, what I don't want to hear is have to disinvite somebody because because the magic number six
yeah.
is. Well,
yeah, and the thing is we wanted this council so that we could address issues in the industry, but it's a very diverse industry.
Mm-hmm.
The problems that I face are not the problems that Mike faces, and they're not the problems that James faces. And so, as an association, we plan to get together and kind of discuss, well, what are the issues?
Mm-hmm.
And to find out, well, what are the biggest issues? And then go and that present them to this council.
The association more numerous than the people in this room?
It's
slightly.
We're hoping it's going to change.
Well, but that's a matter
of fact.
I'll
tell you right now, my industry is changing like rapid. Because from Hawaii to Australia, you know, people doing aquaponics with raising fish and plants is just blowing up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you
well,
know, it's like it's a learning news. Industry, even mm-hmm. though it's not a learning industry. Like this guy over here, he probably understands the concept, but when you merge the two together, you know what I mean? They complement each other, but it changes everything at the same time. So it's really cool to watch your plants grow just by raising fish, but at the same time, like, yeah. you know, pH, nutrients, all these issues come into algae, you know, and I can tell you right now that my side of things is growing quite a bit. Like I'm finding people all the time. It's like, oh, I've tried that and I couldn't make it work. And you know what I mean? Like, oh, okay.
And that's good news. That's the good news side
yeah.
of it, that it's growing. But the impetus of this meeting, frankly, is because the industry, frankly, is struggling. And so getting closer and closer to the regulatory body in a positive way
mm-hmm.
is what we're about here. But in the short run, before we get this growth in all the segments, okay,
mm-hmm.
which is our goal, but in the short run, I'm saying a big chunk of the Utah Aquaculture Association meeting is going to be who's sitting around this table up front.
How many people on the council think they'll attend this aquaculture annual meeting?
Well, so trying to figure out what we're doing.
Okay,
exactly.
First you don't have six, and there's going to be more than four people there, correct?
Yes.
Then I think you're fine.
Okay.
Just
fair enough.
Don't take those four or whoever is part of the council and break away and meet privately at it.
Yeah.
That would, you know, to
and
talk
I would
about
say, Mike, if you had any questions or anything came up in that aquaculture meeting,
yeah,
just call Attorney General and say, here's what we're planning on discussing. Is this okay?
There
if
you
have
go.
A question.
There
because
you go.
Yeah, that's simple.
There you go.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
pretty simple.
We would maybe just let it
we
be known the agenda.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, okay. That helps.
The rest of this packet here has a lot to do with basic requirements of the Open and Public Meetings Act. And Marty and myself and Stacy will help you guys comply with all of the specific requirements that are in the statute. They're laid out in D. As we said, we need an agenda. It has to be published more than 24 hours in advance of the meeting. And there are certain spots where notice has to be posted. And then we take minutes. And so, as Stacy mentioned, we're recording this meeting. We'll put meeting minutes up on the Open and Public Meetings Act, Utah Public Notice website, as well as a list of members present, kind of a summary statement on what was covered in the meeting.
Does the council review those minutes before they're posted?
Yes, we do.
No, they don't.
Well, we do.
They're posted as draft.
Okay.
Because I'm required to post them within 3 days of your meeting. So they are posted as draft. Hmm. And then as one of your agenda topics for your next meeting, you will approve the minutes.
Yeah.
And then the approved version will be posted on the website.
So you do review them?
Okay. You do, but they are public as draft prior to that.
Hmm. Seems odd.
Yeah.
Seems odd to publicly post minutes that aren't approved by the council, saying that those minutes reflect the meeting in their view.
Recent statutory change.
Yeah. Is that right?
The legislature feels that I guess we need to be more forthcoming.
Oh, really?
What goes on. But the other thing on agendas I'd say is to keep is you can't discuss items that aren't on the agenda. I know you Greg is going to get to that, but as far as all of this agenda and notice, Stacy will take care of a good portion of that. But the big one for you is discussing items that aren't on the agenda. Now, you can consider items not on the agenda, you just cannot vote. You could say, let's talk about this next time, you know, this topic, and talk about things to discuss, but what you can't do is vote on an item that makes a recommendation.
Because the public wasn't notified of the agenda item and may not have attended the meeting when they had an opinion, right?
Of what was being discussed on the agenda.
Okay. Two other small items we'd mention: closed meetings. Don't do them without talking to Bushman and myself first. And then second, if we have a defect in compliance on the Open and Public Meetings Act, the decisions that were made during that meeting don't count. Essentially, we got to redo the meeting. So there are some repercussions for not following the Open and Public Meetings Act.
Okay, one other thing.
Yeah.
The recording of this meeting cannot be modified. So if something ill-advised is said, you got it up. That's another statutory requirement. We can't change the recording.
I guess one thing we didn't really, we kind of brushed through it, but you can close this meeting for public comment, and then we can discuss it as a council, but we can't close the meeting. Just so, you can close it to public comment.
Yeah,
doesn't close the meeting, the public's still there, but you can, in other words, if the public continues to talk and we need to discuss that, we can close it to public comment, discuss it, and open it.
Just as long as you don't get confused, once you
right.
close it to public comment, doesn't mean you go deliberate.
Right, it's an open meeting. Right,
yeah.
Just wanted to make that point.
That's the key, is the public gets to sit in and listen to all aspects of the presentations, deliberations, and decisions.
I assume you guys typically establish a comment time window. You can't have somebody filibuster the meeting. So comments are typically, I assume, given a time. You have 2 minutes to comment. You have two minutes to ask a question. You have whatever.
Yep.
Be up to the chair, too, to help manage.
Yeah, the chair's got to manage that.
How many people you think want to comment and so forth. Any
other questions? Okay, so our next packet is our conflict of interest and government ethics packet.
Is that an option, Laura?
Shouldn't be. So we have two main statute sections and then governor's executive order that really lay out your ethical obligations as a member of this council. First section mainly involves conflicts of interest and when those may crop up. So running through those, any potential financial or economic interests that you may hold could potentially present a conflict. That also applies to any spouse or immediate family member that may have an ownership interest, a sizable ownership interest in an organization or entity that may benefit financially from a decision that you guys make. That, given that you guys are all in the industry, that could be a potential thing to think about, and we can help you work through concerns you may have on whether a conflict arises in a particular.
How many of the 10 members on the council actually are? You said, given that you're all in the industry, well, I'm not in the industry. How many really are?
I guess what industry are we talking with
the industry?
So if you're in aquaculture industry, you're growing fish, you're making money off whether it's plants and fish, food and fish, smoked fish.
All that counts.
You might say
okay.
Who?
Okay.
So how many of the 10 actually make a living with fish?
Could be economically impacted by the decisions.
Yeah, that's different than just making a living. Economically, I mean, you are too, potentially, if you have a pond on that 3,000 acre ranch you're talking about. I mean, I'm assuming that's an asset, not a liability.
Yeah. But I guess my question was to Greg's point that you have a conflict of interest. I don't generate economic benefit necessarily from the pond.
Now,
in the same manner in which I might if I actually was creating revenue from generating aquaculture in that pond. Right. So I'm back to my same question I asked before. How many of the 10 council members actually are involved in getting economic gain from aquaculture? Do we know that number?
Yeah, I think you guys can
guess that. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. So some are and some aren't. But if you have a conflict of interest on this council, it just seems really interesting to me that you could have a large, potentially, portion of the council conflicted. And that seems like a tough situation.
And there are a couple processes that you go through if you run into a situation like that. First, you need to declare on the record that you are affiliated with an organization or entity that may financially benefit. Now, whether there's a substantial enough conflict that would require you to abstain from voting is an area where we could help evaluate on a case-by-case basis. We run into this with our wildlife board quite often, and members of the RACs. I mean, they're all hunters, fishers, hunters and anglers that are interested in those topic areas, same as you guys here. And they're voting on issues that directly pertain to what they like to do. So we can help if topics come up that you feel like you may have a financial conflict. We'll help you work through those on a case-by-case basis.
It seems like there's a bit of a conflict here where you're going right back to the rule itself. We have the authority to advise on the stocking of private fish ponds. Well, that could be financial gain, private stocking, short-term abandonment, fishing events. There's a gain there because the fish is sold. At every one of these, in rule, it says that's what you're to advise on.
Yeah.
But now conflict of interest says, no, you can't advise on it. So.
Well, And
maybe
there's a fine distinction we can make that as in your role as a council member, you're representing a entity or a topic area. And where you start to run into conflicts of interest issues is where you're making voting decisions based on your own personal gain and not the topic area or organization that you're appointed to represent. So, does that distinction?
I don't know. Even further, it says species authorized for the importation or use in aquaculture facility. We import fish to sell. There's and then fee fishing. Right there, it says we're going to do rules for fee fishing. There's money involved.
Yeah.
Can I add something, Greg?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is something, I've done this presentation at the Wildlife Board for years and years, and it's always difficult because these general requirements are written in statute. They say what they say, but yet we have these committees and councils and boards that are staffed with people who have a stake in the industry that's being regulated. And the only way I've been able to kind of reconcile it in the end is if the a regulation that you're looking at proposing or voting on disparately impacts you differently than, let's say, the rest of the industry, then that's something you ought to be mindful of. I mean, if there's you're making a recommendation on your own COR application,
okay,
yeah, or something like that, which shouldn't happen because I don't think that's within your authority. But if you want to be careful. So we have folks on the Wildlife Board that are part of the Cooperative Wildlife Management Unit program, which is a program that enables landowners to make money. They don't vote on their own COR, but they do vote on rule changes to that program in general. And so that's kind of been the best way I've been able to parse this out and make some sense of it, give function to the council and what it's trying to do, being staffed by folks that all have some of our financial interests, some are recreational interests, but they all have interests.
Okay.
In the outcome of these types of decisions.
And actually, you know, so based on what Marty just said, everything you just listed in specific there, you don't have to worry about it, because actually nobody around the table is actually specifically involved in those. Maybe this is working out.
All right. Well, thanks for the clarification. Yeah. That was
nice to say. I don't know that I've got a bright line I could draw for you. I don't know where that is myself. The only thing I'd like to do is try to stay a little ways away from where I think it might be.
And if it makes you feel uncomfortable, there's probably something there to think about. I guess going through the rest of that packet, there's a section, subsection C, gifts and bribes, that comes up every now and then, and the essentially don't take a gift or an offer that seems too good to be true, and anything over $50 or kind of a publicly provided award, a bona fide business loan, things that are kind of straightforward, avoid taking anything other than those. And, you know, we had a couple former supervisors that got in a little bit of hot water for something similar to that. So,
neither was convicted, man, but they spent a lot of money and had their lives turned upside down. Yeah. And this gift thing is accepting a gift in the capacity as a council member, not a gift from the association or something like that. But you just got to be careful that things you receive cannot be perceived as quid pro quo for some favor that somebody's trying to get from you, a favor to vote.
Let me address these slightly out of order. So we'll jump to this one. So there's a packet on GRAMA, which is our Government Records Access and Management Act section. As members of the council, you guys are subject to our state records laws, which is essentially boils down to anything that is written down, whether it's on paper or electronic, potentially becomes subject to public disclosure. The definition of what qualifies as a record under that state statute is super broad, includes emails, text messages, handwritten notes, our meeting minutes, this PowerPoint, it runs the gamut. And so what you guys say and do over email is subject to public disclosure, so please be mindful of that. Don't say anything on email or via text message that you wouldn't want published on the nightly news or spread around. So there are a whole slew of exceptions to GRAMA. There's various categories of records, some of which are subject to public disclosure and some of which we can keep confidential, but at the outset, just kind of get the mindset that what you say and do as part of the council is part of the public record. Anything further?
Just because you're using your personal phone for a council business does not mean that email, text,
personal
is not subject to public disclosure. I mean, your personal stuff isn't going to be disclosed, but I've had a lot of folks before, I'm using my own phone. Doesn't matter. It's the substance of the communication that makes it subject to GRAMA, not the device that's being used to carry it, or the ownership of the device.
Any other questions on that? Can we get...
Yeah, I got it. I do.
Go ahead.
going back to what you just said, so if one of us is not involved in something or something that's going on, you know, if someone takes a bribe or whatever, I don't want my email to be rummaged through and pulled up personal stuff or whatnot. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it's only
so how does that work?
It would only be emails that you are sending and receiving as part of your participation in the council.
From members or
from other council members, from members of the public, okay. From anything that has to do with the council's business is potentially subject to grant. If you're, I don't know if you're using a personal email as part of your participation. So all of those personal emails wouldn't be subject to disclosure. But the work-related ones, whether there's something nefarious or just a member of the public is curious about what the council's been doing, they can request all of your emails that you've sent as part of your participation on the council. That it's encouraged. The state legislature encourages transparency and the ability for the public to see into what the council's been doing.
So would it be smart to open up a special email address that we then send that I give to you?
I do have board members that have chosen to do that, to pull them outside of their personal one and establish a Gmail account of some sort specifically for that.
It also would help you keep all your work cabined into one area too.
The way a grandma request will usually work is we'll get a letter, a request saying we want all these records pertaining to the subject matter, and then we've got to go through our emails. If it's had matters pertaining to emails or text from you guys, we would ask you to go through and find all of those emails
in order to show cause
and just to disclose them.
We're so used
nobody's
to
nobody's going
to
search your phone unless
every day.
If there's some kind of thought that there's a criminal violation, law enforcement get a subpoena, at which point they could go through everything on your phone.
Okay.
A grandma request is usually something we just have to go. We got to find.
But if you had a subpoena or law enforcement action, his separate email address isn't going to protect him anyway.
Probably
they're going to go through all your email anyway.
No, if there's a subpoena, they're going to probably look.
And the key is don't get yourself to where that's ever an issue.
Please,
yeah,
please.
Yeah.
Really
stressing on a lot of stuff here.
So basically, it's a self-disclosure requirement unless it's legal action, and then nothing you have is private. So.
I'll say the good news is this all kind of sounds scary. This is a fairly non-controversial type of council.
It's almost like be afraid to speak, but you shouldn't be afraid to speak.
Getting involved and wanting to dig into what you guys recommend.
Get it.
It's boards that actually make policy and rules that tend to draw a lot of attention, not so much the advisory councils.
Right.
And then maybe this is our last topic area, and then we'll take my seat. last one is maintaining authority and credibility, and that's our last handout. And so this is a full sheet of words that essentially boils down to come to the council with an open mind, actively listen and consider what's being presented, and as you go through work, as you work through issues, to the extent that you can kind of explain where you're coming from, it really adds a lot to both the council and any members of the public that are here. If it looks and actually, if it appears like you're listening to what they have to say, you're considering both sides of the issue, you're coming down in fair and reasonable compromise, or you're explaining your position well, it really goes a long way to adding credibility to what you guys do. So I don't know if you have anything else you want to weigh in on it, but
close to 30 years in practicing law, I just observed some things with people, and people can come to basically have their fate decided by another person. If they feel that person considered what they had to say and was fair, even if you go against them, they will almost always accept it. It's when they feel like they didn't get a fair chance that the person had made up their mind before they ever walked into the room is what really irritates people and forces them to do kind of unreasonable things like hire lawyers and try to fight you. And I just, you know, this is a big thing. We've had board members, wildlife board members that have been very skilled at being objective, or at least appearing objective. Some not so much, and just the ones that don't appear objective tend to cause a lot more controversy and discord and unhappiness. So even if you do have strong opinions about it, maybe even you've made up your mind, I would ask you to still stay open-minded. You may hear something that changes your position, but above all, at least help people believe that you are open-minded and you're going to consider their opinion.
We kind of covered that, but that's back on our grandma topic. So really, I guess, two closing points. Don't be afraid to ask us questions, both Marty and I, Stacy. Rory's available as well. And really don't let Robert's Rules of Order and all these other, you know, scary topics that we ran through kind of get in the way of the actual substance of what the council is here to do. So we'll help you make sure that you comply with all of the legal requirements. You guys get to do the actual fun work. So don't be a stranger. Don't hesitate to contact us if you have questions.
We recognize this is a lot to digest this quick, so there will be questions, and we're going to be here to help you through this process and to answer any questions you have. And while there are some sideboards as far as what you can officially provide as far as recommendations or advice to a wildlife board or even to the Commissioner of Agriculture, as agencies, we want to hear your concerns. So if there's issues and concerns that come up, we want to hear them. I mean, that's what we're here for, is to work together to try to do what we can to support the private aquaculture industry and to work together towards solving some of these issues and concerns. So we're here. We want to hear from you.
Yeah. Okay. With that, let's take a quick 10-minute break. Stretch your legs. Use the restroom if you need to. I'm going to clear this computer stuff off the table so we have a little bit more room. And then we'll come back and vote for a chair and a vice chair and talk about how you want to structure agenda items and formal meetings from here on out.
You know what? I think originally I would say yes. I thought I was going to be on the next one. I think what happened was I'm also on the official policy board. I think it made sense that they had that. So I think Drew's in a position. And to be honest, I'm encouraged.
Getting snow in
or up in 1 month, or we can have them quarterly or whenever we want, right?
You could. I'm going to go ahead and turn the
recording. We can have one.
Or you could have less, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Not that I'm recommending that.
Yeah,
it just came up.
But that is an option. One other thing we need to talk about is the membership of this council. You are all appointed for a 4-year term. Some of you were appointed for a 2-year term. The governor had the option by statute to regulate the terms so that we're only replacing half of the council every 2 years. So if you're wondering why some of you get 4 and some get 2, that's why. If, for one reason or another, any of you were to not complete your term and needed to drop off, we would do a public recruitment to fill your spot, and then the new person would actually fill your unexpired term. So they wouldn't do 4 years of their own, they would fill that term and then be eligible to apply for the vacancy.
How were the council members selected from those that were nominated?
They went up to Mike Styler and DNR. So he actually oversees this council. So all of the nominations were submitted to him. He worked through a process of eliminating and ranking and then sent that to the governor's office for appointment. According to statute, we had to do 4 names for each 2 appointment. There were 6 names for the 3 appointment. I'm trying to think off the top of my head how the rest of them went. 2 for the 2. And then it was the governor's discretion as to the final selection. So that's how, and then we caught word from the governor whom he had selected. And actually, my first time seeing whom he had selected showed up on their website. So that's how I knew all of you guys got picked. So it's kind of an interesting process. Any questions on that? All right, you guys have the task of electing a chairman and a vice chair. As you heard, Greg Hansen, the chairman, will be the one that runs the meetings. Today, you just have a small handful of public. That could definitely change. So choose someone who's going to manage the meeting and move through your agenda items. Do you want to tell me how you want to do it? You want to open it for nominations? You want to self-nominate? What do you want to do?
Just one question. Can the nominations only come from the council?
Yes.
Can they volunteer?
Absolutely. This is your council, and I will help you run it the way you want to run it and keep you legal. But you tell me how you want to do it.
Well, I personally think it should be council members should nominate, and then there should be a vote to sustain the nomination. So I think the council should nominate who they want for a chair or a vice chair, and then let the council either sustain or vote on that. The same way you'd follow the rules of order on a motion is how I would suggest we do it.
So a nomination and a second, and then we'll close the nomination period?
Whatever others want to do, but that way the council all can do, every member can nominate whoever he wants.
I'd like to nominate Mark. Just because he said Robert's Rules of Order.
I'll second that.
I'll second
can
that.
Can I vote for Drew?
Probably no.
Probably not. Yeah.
I'll nominate Mike as a vice chair.
Okay, let's keep nominations open. Hold that. Put a pin in that for a minute. Let's hold nominations open for chair. Are there any other nominations? We have Mark with a second. Or is there a motion to close nominations for the chair?
Please nominate someone. Keep nominating.
You seem to have the best
hearing
understanding.
Hearing none, I'm going to close the nominations. I'm sure.
I'm so moved to do that.
Thank you, Lee. Congratulations, Mark.
Oh, boy. Thank you all.
Awesome. So you don't even know what you got yourself involved in. Now you're chairman.
No, I didn't. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know it was inaugural council. I knew it was something to do good for public, for fishing, and here I am. So. Well, on that front, let me just say I've run Robert's Rule of Order for 20 years.
There you go.
In my professional life, I've chaired multiple large, multi-million dollar sportsman foundations. So that part of it isn't going to worry me, but I would just warn you also, I'm a very thick skin. We're going to get it done. We're not going to mess around. We're going to follow the agenda. We're not going to I'm not going to let you pontificate. So you may not want.
You've already been nominated and elected.
I'm warning you. But you haven't voted yet, so I'm warning you. I want you to know what you're getting. They made me president of my HOA, and now they all hate me because I actually enforce the restrictive covenants. So I'm just warning you what you're getting. Before you vote, you may want a kinder, gentler person.
Well, hearing that rousing speech. All in favor.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Awesome.
All right, I would open the nominations for vice chair.
We had one. You want to repeat your nomination?
Yeah, I nominate Mike.
I would just as having the experience of having been on the Blue Ribbon Fisheries Advisory Council for a number of years, I think it would be nice to have somebody either from the Agriculture Department or the Department of Wildlife Resources, because that gives us an inside contact of a professional that can take steps to get things done.
That's not a bad idea.
So at the moment, we have a nomination for Mike. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Oh, now it's open for discussion. Okay, so actually, I sit on an HOA board too.
Board. I'm so sorry.
So running Robert's Rules,
my sympathies,
can be good. And I think, and as I've talked to you briefly out in the hall, if I think I could be a good backup as far as if you're traveling or whatever, because you know it's easy to make the first meeting, right? Sometimes it's hard to make every single meeting, I suppose. But as far as the discipline of running an organized meeting, I very much would be willing to be the vice president and help. So I think the vice president's role would be to help.
Can we go back to Lee's point for just a minute?
Sure.
There's nothing in the governance of the council that calls for a chair or vice chair or someone representing government versus industry. So that's wide open to whatever
we want.
It's
open to the entire council.
Is there also any requirement, maybe Greg, this is an answer to you, is it a chair, a vice chair, and that's the limit to the governance of the council, or can there be a secretary, or can there be another advisor?
It only indicates chair and vice chair.
Silent on issues.
I will say, Lee, from what you were talking about, that we're Department of Ag, we're very approachable. We connect. We talk to Mike all the time offline. You know, if that's what your concern is, we do have that ability to advise, and we're always open. Our phone call, you know, anything you need. I've been in this job for 2.5 years, and I think I talk to folks daily. I represent all industries in Utah, so that would not be a concern on my part. And plus, I'm appointed, and you know, the governor can cut my head off tomorrow, or even the commissioner can cut my head off tomorrow. So I have, you know, I don't have those concerns for that type of thing.
I think you could say the same thing for the Division of Wildlife. I think Drew's very open to meetings, outside discussions. And the other thing too, considering how this board evolved, I hate to see in the long run a perceived bias by having, say, a Department of Agriculture, say a hypothetical chair, co-chair. I think that could be potentially a problem that in the long term, you know, Robert, Judd, Neil, we've all worked together for a long time. You know, this is kind of your initial idea, I think, by the industry really driving it on that end, I think would be a good approach. I don't see there really being a bias, but we just don't want to have that perception.
I do. I see there being a bias because in one section we got people making the rules, and in the other section, we have kind of a conflict of interest because you guys have your own hatcheries, and we're not necessarily, I don't have a hatchery, but do you see what I'm saying there? Yeah. I'm not throwing you under the bus by any
right.
means, but.
Right, no,
but
see,
actually,
you
guys are agreeing.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
that's what.
Okay.
Right,
exactly. That's exactly what
yeah.
Wade's saying.
So,
is that,
I think the whole origin of this meeting was to bring private industry into an advisory capacity. And in order to do that, I mean, I think it's great that the private, you know,
well, so what I've heard, Lee, to your comment is I've heard the government reps, sorry if I call you government, but
that's
it's an easy way for me to characterize it because there's different organizations here, saying that maybe the chair of this council should represent private industry and private citizens from a public view and then just consult with the agencies and the governments who are bodies on the committee. So that, I think that's what I've heard. Are you okay with that?
Well, I think you've maybe heard a little correct, but I heard a little different. I heard a lot of government people passing the buck. and my experience is that if you
fun.
Have somebody who's in an office for you to go to, Mark, and to talk about things in preparation for agendas or whatever, it's nice to have somebody in one localized spot that you can go to.
Now, are you talking as far as administrative stuff?
No, well, yeah.
Because that's going to be me and Mark.
Well, not administrative, but to put the ideas of the council together. Because it's you that's really going to come up with a lot of the agenda. It's nice to talk about all of us doing it, but in reality, it's you and this vice chairman.
Yeah, no, I understand your point, Lee. So in many ways, isn't that role filled by Stacy under her responsibility to coordinate with the council?
She's not a member of the council.
Well, I oversee the council.
Yeah, but you're not a voting member.
I'm not a voting, which is better.
Which actually made you better.
Because I don't have any bias on any of your agenda items.
Well, I'm hoping nobody here has any bias.
And I should add that nothing would make me happier if I could nominate Drew and then tell him when he arrives. But that, I don't think is appropriate. That would be entertaining.
Okay, so to recircle this, so we have a nomination that was made by a council member for Mike to be a vice chair. We have a suggestion, which was made by Lee, to have a government counterpart. We had a rebuttal from government counterpart saying it's unnecessary. That's just what I heard. Is there another nomination to be made, or?
I'd nominate Drew then.
Okay, yeah, we can vote on it. I think that's fine, Lee.
Don't tell him that.
So we have a nomination for Drew, we have a nomination for Mike. Is there a second for the nomination for Drew?
Well, I might as well be guilty and second.
Okay, so we have a second. You may lose your job. We have a second. So any other nominations for a vice chair from the council? Okay, hearing none. Nominations for vice chair are closed. We have two. nominations. Let's take a vote. Majority rules in this case, correct?
Yes.
All those in favor of Mike for vice chair of the council, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye. Aye.
That is the majority, so by definition, Mike, you've been nominated vice chair. Can't wait to work with you. I have a big travel schedule this year, so.
I'll still let Drew know we were that close.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Let him know. Let him know, too.
Out there. That was fair. Because
it was Lee's idea and a nomination. No, so.
No. I'm Pontius Pilate.
Pontius Pilate, that one?
An anonymous second on that, too. So.
Okay, Stacey. What else do we need to do?
All right, you've elected your chair and vice chair, so I officially turn the meeting over to you now.
Okay.
And you can decide how you want to go about gathering agendas, what your next meeting might
look
like.
So first thing I want to do is talk about scheduling the meetings for the year, because I need to get those meetings on my calendar for the whole year. I assume you all do too, right? So can we just take a few minutes and try and select some available dates when we can schedule meetings? Now, we can hold up to 4 meetings, but we don't have to hold 4 meetings. Because this is a new council and it's an inaugural meeting, we haven't gone through a full agenda. My guess is we should schedule 3 more meetings. That's what I would suggest. I would suggest we schedule them quarterly, 3 more meetings. I mean, let's have one sometime early summer, maybe one early fall, and one early winter. So we have 3 more meetings for the council. So this is always going to be difficult, but let's jump into the calendar and see if we can find a way to do that. And it's going to be a little tricky too for me. So
Stacy, when it comes to actually picking a specific date, would you assist with, say, doodle polls? Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that would be helpful because the way schedules change, even if we pick something today, there's going to be some variation.
Yeah, so I have a little bit of a problem with that because I'm going to try and lock down a date.
Yeah.
I want to try and lock down dates today because I'm going to put in my calendar and everybody's going to plan around them. And I'm out of the country for 6 weeks this year, and I kind of need dates, and I need commitment from council members that you're going to be here, or someone will sit in. I can't have floating meetings this year. It won't work for me. And I'm looking at busy people around this table. So what I would really like to do, Wade, is actually nail down dates and say, that's it. Everybody put it in your calendar. Everybody plan on it and just make it happen. I'd rather just make it happen.
Okay.
Last day of the month, spring, summer, fall, winter.
Are there other deadlines that they need to be aware of as they think about setting
up
these?
Point.
One of the things you'll want to consider is if there are recommendations or proposals coming out of our aquatics section, that's going to impact the Wildlife Board this year.
Okay.
You'll have to be able to be making your meeting so that it falls within when their recommendations are available. They usually do them 2 weeks prior to the RAC meeting. They go out to the RAC meeting, and then we have 2 weeks between the RAC and the board. So if you want to have any impact on the board or any advice on those proposals, your meeting has got to line up before the Wildlife Board meets.
Great. So do you have those dates for the Wildlife Board meetings?
Yes, they set theirs a year in advance, and
right.
We do not move those.
Yeah, right.
So
can you tell us when those are? Can you give us the windows then, Stacey, that you're talking about?
What we don't know is if there's going to be recommended changes.
Right. I don't know what aquatics is recommending.
Yeah, advisory authority.
But if they do, they typically occur in the fall.
Okay.
Yes. So they would be the September 27th board meeting. Is when, if we took out aquatics recommendations, that's when they would hit the board.
You're talking aquatics recommendations specific to this advisory council?
Yes, yeah. If there were any.
So when would we have to convene on recommendations from this council for that 27th meeting? What does that schedule look like? How far in advance of that do we have to be, in other words?
Well, you wouldn't see their recommendations until they hit their brown bag, which is August 21st.
Okay.
So that's the first that you would see what the recommendations are. So your meeting would need to be sometime between August 21st and I would say prior to September 13th, because the Wildlife Board receives all of their information 2 weeks before their meeting. So if you wanted it to be included in the Wildlife Board packet for them to review, it would have to be available by then. But again, if they don't have any recommendations that...
I understand.
Then
so what if we so we can pick a date the back end of August then, so we could theoretically we could see if any recommendations came out of that, and then we could hold a meeting on like August 31st or August 27th, somewhere in that week. Mm-hmm. Maybe we could hold our meeting, right? That would have given us a week to look at what came out.
Yeah, you'll need to avoid August 30th because that's another Wildlife Board meeting.
So if people will look at your calendars, can we look and see what August 29th looks like on your calendars and see if that's available. That's a week after we might see something that we could work to.
What day of the week is
that? That's a Wednesday.
Wednesdays are really bad for me.
How about
I have my board meetings for
how about Tuesday the 28th then? Okay.
I think that would work.
That's a Tuesday.
That should work.
Yeah. Tuesday the 28th, 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. So let's schedule that August 28th, 9 a.m. And you know, these are just here an attempt to have us all locked in. I understand they may need to change.
Yeah, somewhere in another
room. It'll be here, this building, in a room that Stacy will arrange, correct?
Hopefully
or someone will arrange.
Larger.
Okay. So August 28th. Now, are there other meetings in the fall, winter that need to be coordinated around these kind of rack meetings, board meetings?
That is the only one that impacts aquatics. The rest of them have to do with big game.
Okay.
Agriculture doesn't have any, I guess, specific time of year you'd be looking at any changes to the aquaculture.
Not for aquaculture, no.
Okay, so then let's do a meeting in advance of August 28th because I hate to wait that long. So let's back up and let's jump on this. If we're going to have a council, let's jump on the issues we're supposed to be working. So maybe somewhere in the June maybe time frame, if we can.
Mm-hmm.
Is Tuesday's going to be a day that works best for everyone? Is that what I'm hearing maybe?
Tuesday works good for me.
Okay, and that works good for you too. How about if we were to target something like June 5th, maybe. Let me see. How about a target of June 5th, that Tuesday? Would that work for everyone?
I may not be in the state.
Okay.
Hopefully not.
You're not sure? You're not sure or you're not going to be?
I'm not sure,
okay.
But hopefully have something happening.
You hope? Okay, well, good for you. So, anybody else have a problem with June 5th, Tuesday, June 5th? Does that work? Can we schedule that then for the next meeting? It would be June 5th, 9 a.m. here.
I've got a question about the weeks that we're going to select here. Let's say we select four for the year. I don't have Drew's calendar, so it's difficult for me to say for sure.
Yeah.
My question is, for these weeks, let's say if these days do not fit, how does the rest of the week look for you? Because what I'm thinking is, potentially, if he has conflict and I can't be here to represent his position, maybe we can send out a doodle poll just expanding into that week that may give everyone an opportunity to weigh in on.
Okay, well, that week, I get on a plane and head out on the 6th. So
okay.
I could do the 4th or 5th.
4th or
5th. Are the only 2 days that week I'm available.
Okay.
I don't know about others, but Monday, Tuesday, 4th and 5th.
Okay.
Works.
Stacey, I have one question.
Uh-huh.
And I appreciate Wade being here, but representing Drew. But if one of the other guys from the industry can't show up, could I represent them as well? Or how does this work?
Wade is only here because it's the first meeting.
Right.
And Drew asked him to come back to fill him in on it. In the future, if one of the members could make it, their seat would be vacant. There would not be somebody sitting in for them.
All right.
That helps. No, I see what you're asking, but
yeah.
No, you don't send someone in your place.
All right. Just clarifying.
You can make public comments, you know.
You can't. You can't be a voting council.
But you wouldn't
be a voting member.
Okay. All right. So far then, folks, we have targeted the 4th or 5th. I'll say the 5th on Tuesday. If we can keep them on Tuesday, it might keep life a little simpler. But so that would be June 5th, and then we have August 28th. And then we would have one more meeting.
November would be the next.
Somewhere around November, yeah.
Mm.
So if we look to November 5th.
It's a Monday.
Why do I have Robert Judd's birthday in my calendar? Your birthday on the 3rd of November?
That it is.
How'd that get in my calendar?
That week is a bad week. That's usually when we're doing fish inspections.
I have no idea why you're...
The following week's a bad week. That's
my biggest concern is, why is your birthday in my calendar?
I have no idea.
Holy... That's just really concerning, Robert. I've only met you for 30 minutes and your birthday's in my calendar.
So when's my birthday? What do we get? When's your birthday? You know what I mean? We better pass this information around. Maybe we're gonna get treats.
Okay, so you said November 5th is a bad week for the
first week of November is typically when they do
it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, How about...
No, all I'm saying, Mark, is typically, I know that Neil and I both usually the first week or two of November is when we're doing our inspections, and so those aren't
very
cheap.
If it was on Thursday in November, that would be ideal.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Any day besides Monday, Tuesday.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So how about if we did, what if we did November 1st, in this case, which is a Thursday? November 1st, does that possibly work for folks? Oh, that, I'm sorry, no, that doesn't work for me. I'm out of town, I'm in Arkansas.
Arkansas,
yes, sorry. I won't be back until probably the 4th, so that doesn't work. So we'd have to slip into the next week then, I guess.
6 is Election Day.
Yeah.
The 3-day weekend for Veterans Day is 10, 11, and 12.
Election Day is the 6th.
So what's that?
So how about the 8th? Thursday the 8th, is that a possibility? November 8th?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, so let's target that. So what I have is I have June 5th, 9 a.m., this building. I have August 28th, 9 a.m., this building. I have November 8th, 9 a.m., this building. Okay. And a quorum is 6. We have a council member of 10. So just so everybody understands, if you can't make it to a meeting, the council rolls without you.
Yep.
You may miss a chance to vote. You may miss a chance to amend. You may miss a chance to move. The council's going to move without you if we have 6 and we have a quorum. So it'd be nice to, obviously we all want to be here every time, but just so you understand, if you're not, life will go on and that's the way it should be. All right. So we've established now meeting dates for the council for the rest of this year. I think the next thing we want to talk about, because this meeting really was administrative and it really was focused on governance, so we don't have an agenda for this meeting. What I would like to do is talk about the mission. I'd like to talk about what is the mission of this meeting, right? We've established, or the council, we've established a council. We know by statute what the categories of our objectives are in terms of where we have authority to advise people who truly have authority to rulemake. But within those 5 or 6 categories, was it 6 categories,
six,
I think?
7, yeah.
Within those categories, I'd like to get a better understanding of what is the purpose, intent, and the mission of the council. So let's just, can we just have a discussion about that? Neil, I'd like maybe you to just start on what the vision was, and maybe Robert or others, the vision for this council is, because I honestly don't know.
Okay. Well,
I have to go.
Okay,
so.
See ya.
Thank you so much. What I would like to see is just the fact that we can all sit down and talk about the issues. I feel like in the past, the industry has given their side, and it seemed like there's maybe been a little bit of a wall, maybe not understanding our side, or maybe we're not understanding the division side or the department side. Maybe they've got a point that we're not understanding. So I want this to be a council meeting where we counsel together, not just that we have an agenda and we want to push that agenda, but I would hope that we are slow in voting, but take our time in understanding each other. Just like Marty was saying, people want to be heard, and this is the voice to hear. We want to hear what are all the concerns out there. Maybe Rob and I have pushed too much of our agenda, and maybe that really wasn't what the industry wanted. Maybe the pond owners have a different view, but we just really want to be able to discuss and talk and hear everybody's point. And then, you know, once we've had that opportunity, if everybody says, you know what, Neil, you're up in the night, that's not a big issue, I'm good with it, but I would like to have a voice, and this is it.
Okay. So I had a conversation with Greg Sheehan. He came up to the ranch with me and spent a day with me, and we rode around and looked at some stuff because I knew Greg from when I was chairman and CEO of Vista and did some things with the governor's office and economic development. And so I asked Greg this question about private fisheries versus public, and what were the conflicts and were there real areas of dislocation between private and public? And I think what I heard from Greg anyway that day as we rode around in the Ranger was, I heard Greg wanting to be, and I know he's in D.C. now, but very collaborative in working with private industry. What I heard Greg say is I think there's misperceptions maybe from private industry of what the government's trying to accomplish. And I heard the same, I think, from Robert, maybe a little bit from you. There may be misperceptions about what industry is trying to accomplish and what government's doing. So I think what you just said is create a collaborative body mm-hmm. in this council with representatives of both public and private sectors, and in a collaborative way address areas where there appear to be either conflicts of interest or conflicts of mission or areas where we can create a better understanding so that we actually can, if necessary, advise rulemakers to improve the fisheries capabilities within the state, the output of the fisheries, and how that impacts both public and private users. That kind of a thing, is that kind of it?
Yeah, there's some things we look at and we think, boy, the logical solution is as black and white to us, but then we present it and it's not black and white. And so, you know, we just need to have more open dialogue. It's been over a year, I feel like, since we've had a meeting like this. And so it's just nice, refreshing to know that every quarter we can talk about the issues.
So can I ask this, Neil or Mike or Stacy or anybody really, Wade, anybody? I'm not sure, just Mark, you may have it all figured out because I'm not in the fishing industry. I'm not sure I understand exactly what we want to accomplish. I know we want dialogue. Uh-huh. I know we want a collaborative environment to discuss things. What are some of those things? What is it we really want to accomplish? Do we want more fish? Do we want more people fishing? What do we want?
Well, so it's interesting you bring that up because there was kind of a gathering of industry aquaculturists, if you will, a few weeks ago, where we tried to ask that very question. And Neil, in your head, you have right. But remember what we did, Neil, is we kind of boiled it down under the guise of exactly what's being talked about here, rather than jump into any one particular person's specific issues.
What do we really want to
about? And so, why don't you hand that back to me?
Yeah.
So basically, this was kind of a rough agenda we're calling as an addition, if you will, to even propose if there was even such time. So it wasn't anything that was agreed upon or nothing, other than that this would be, I think, able to answer such an open-ended question, which I think, what is the mission, is got to be the first question to even be asked, right? So let me pass this around, which again, not everybody in this meeting was in that, but all this was trying to do was say, look, instead of specifics, the very first bullet here that you see asks a very basic question, and that is, what about building trust? Because What seems to be the elephant in the room, if you will, that was also part of the energy behind getting such a group together like this, was this thing called trust. And how do we build trust as the foundation of the working relationship between private aquaculture interests and the Department of Agriculture and the Division of Wildlife Resources?
And
if you notice what's written in finer print under here, this group that got together kind of just roughly said, this isn't something that we're just asking for a one-second one-liner on. If what we're really asking this question, the perspective we're coming from is reconciliation. So in other words, what we're not really asking for is just the different entities to defend themselves in 10 minutes. Right. From past things, but rather think deeper and think in terms of if you're really going after reconciliation so that the working environment gets better and better, you think in terms of what is the other party going through, what are their fears, what are they trying to guard against, how are they seeing life that might be different than my interest, and then come back maybe even the next meeting, Mark, with having thought about it, collaborated it with their counterparts and constituencies, and come back with, in 10 minutes, this is how we've seen the world, and this would be our recommendation. Not just discussing our issue, but rather, this would be our recommendation, how reconciliation can maybe be improved so that our working relationships improve, so that regardless of the specific issues, when we do get to it, we have a much better environment to actually get something done, something accomplished, realizing we are just advisory. We get that.
Right.
But when they're specific and they're pointing towards actually getting something done, and Mark, I appreciate you saying that. Because what we have to get beyond, hopefully, in a mission, is that we get beyond just airing our concerns in specific, but rather coming together as one voice to accomplish win-win-win.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Okay. So Stacy, what does the state want to see come out of the council? So what I heard from the private side of the council is we want a cooperative environment which can improve the trust and relationship between the private growers and the people in the agriculture industry and the regulators, if you will, or on the government side. So for this council, from the government's perspective, the state's perspective, what is it you guys want to achieve and come out of this?
I see you guys wanting to basically have a thumb on it.
Well, wait a minute. Before you speak for them, which I don't think is appropriate, right? We heard from us. Just let them say what they want.
All right.
You know, I can't give you a fair question on what the state wants to come out of this. I can tell you what my position on this is. Like yourself, I'm not in the fish business.
Hmm.
I'm not from the aquatic side. I don't deal with that. What I do is I run a meeting and a public process that brings everybody to the table, that creates a fair, equal playing station for everybody. And what I heard through this whole legislative creation of this council was that parties felt they didn't have a seat at the table, that there wasn't an open dialogue going on. I think there also may be some misconceptions on parts of the division, the department, and private aquaculture that could be addressed and discussed here. So my role in this is making sure everybody feels like they have a seat at the table, including the public that don't sit on this council, which is why I will do everything I can to make sure these meetings are transparent, to make sure those who have a discrepancy or have, for those of you who didn't get an agenda earlier, who have a voice that they want heard, this is a place for it to be. Granted, you are advisory to the Wildlife Board. My job also is taking your suggestions, your advice, and getting it in front of the Wildlife Board. So my process completes it for you. I walk you through the public process, and then I take your final product, and I walk it through the Wildlife Board.
So that's an administrative perspective
that's
of what you want to have happen. Okay, so that's fine.
So
how about Wade, or how about others?
I'll jump in from the division perspective. I think if you go back, and Neil kind of touched on this, I don't know, year and a half-ish ago, we kind of sat down with the private aquaculture industry as the division, and we kind of had a conversation about revising some rules. And we did make some revisions to the rules that came out of that. I would second what Neil said, where, you know, I think the environment in those meetings was maybe not how we wanted it. You know, I think it kind of came out a little bit division versus industry. And I don't know if the rule that came out was really reflected everybody perfectly. But I also want to second what Mike says, where I think building trust would be great. You know, I think from the division perspective, you know, I think we feel the same way. We would like to have more trust with the industry, and you guys like the same for us. So I think, you know, what you just said, I think really kind of reflects on what we feel as well. The other thing I would say is I think that in the past, you know, it's been very much like the private trout growers and the division sitting down. I think one nice thing about this group is we have interests like angling interests and private pond owners and all that. I think there's a good opportunity here to draw in opinions from those other groups, because everybody is really, these other groups are also affected by, you know, what happens, actions from the division or actions by the private aquaculture industry. So.
Okay. Well, it's always interesting because it's always interesting because often the agencies that you represent are seen as regulatory bodies, right? Not necessarily always in line with private industry or even private citizens, because often you're seen as regulatory, the badge and the gun and the whatever, right?
That's what the fear is.
So I hope that we can address that openly, and I think this idea of trust comes from open, honest communication and not being offended, right? So I would first ask the council, please do not be offended. I've been doing this a long time. I have very, very thick skin. And the reason is I've been offended a million times to the point I no longer can be offended. So I would hope that the council will be able to get to that point where none of this is personal and none of this is taken with offense, but we just work it out. So Wade, you had a comment?
Yeah, I just had one more thing to add, and I think this all ties together very well. Is, you know, in the end, we're trying to create an avenue as well that's going to allow everyone to be successful, Division of Wildlife and private industry.
Yeah.
And I think you make a good point, even as you spoke up to make the point that, you know, it seems like the Division of Wildlife wants to have their thumb on the regulatory aspect. You know, that's part of just the rules and regulations we all have to deal with. It's not us coming down or the Department of Agriculture coming down on you. Robert, Neil, and I have, you know, we've gone rounds on lots of these things over the years, and we understand there's just a lot of challenges. And no matter what we do right now, it's going to take a little bit, but there's a perception that we're standing here saying no. There's a perception that we can do some things and you can't, and we need to get past that.
Well, when it comes to government, agencies and industries, and I've worked with everybody from NASA to DOD to DOE to everybody over the years. And before Fist Outdoor, I was the CEO of a Fortune 500 aerospace and defense company headquartered in Washington, D.C. Spent a ton of time on the Hill, spent a ton of time at NASA, spent a ton of time in the Pentagon. And one of the challenges as a private guy is you look at the government, and it takes one person to say no, and it takes 10 people to say yes.
Yeah.
And it is a problem. I mean, I understand that from the private sector view. It feels like when you're dealing with regulatory bodies or with the government, it just takes one person to say no. But in order to get a yes, it takes the whole state, right, to say, say yes. So I understand that can be a perception. I understand the reality of that. But I think what I heard you say was that you wanted to try and create trust and common approaches for the success of private and public fisheries.
Absolutely. I mean, because that's really what we're getting at in the end. You know, we're dealing with our anglers on a couple of different levels, but in the end, if we can build both programs efficiently, it's a win-win for Utah. It's a win-win for the industry.
Yeah, that's
it. I mean,
it really is.
And
so
that's
can I ask a question about that, though, Wade? I'd like to make sure I understand how you define success. So when we say success of the private aquaculture industry,
right,
and the success of the publicly
right
held fisheries, how do we measure? I honestly don't know. What is our measure of success? What does success mean in that
level
context?
Happiness?
And that is, you know, there is some distinct differences there. Well, maybe not distinct, but there are some differences there. So you're still trying to provide private aquaculture, provide a fish for angling purposes. And that's exactly what the Division of Wildlife is doing. More fish, happier anglers, everybody's happy.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than going fishing and catching nothing.
Yeah.
And my wife
right
says fishing is a jerk on one end of the pole waiting for a jerk on the other. Because she's been fishing many
good
times and caught nothing.
That's
and
pretty good.
So you got to catch fish, right?
Yeah. But when you look at the private industry as well, I mean, there's a fiscal component, a business-related component that we also have to address as well. And, I mean, it's still tied to the anglers. You know, if you're stocking ponds, if you're, you know, these guys are stocking your pond, the more, the bigger fish you have, the better they survive, the happier you're going to be. So I think they're still tied together with that that common thread. But then again, how do we all work together to make sure that there's an avenue for you to sell fish, to make a living, for the industry to grow? I mean, I think
there's another element here, too. We also have the responsibility to protect native species.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a role that we take very seriously. So as you look at what's going on in the private sector, we have to look at what are the threats, what are the risks associated with some of these things. And as you look at importing species into the state, what are the threats to the native species that are here? One of the roles we play is to prevent future federal listing of species in Utah. We don't want to see any more federal intervention on behalf of any species in Utah because it has a huge impact on our ability to develop water in the state, economic opportunities. There's just a whole host of things.
Absolutely.
That are directly tied to
right
uses of water in Utah.
Right.
So
that's actually a great point, Rory. And that's when we start talking about the regulatory component, I think that's where things get really complicated. And Neil would agree with that. We've really tried to work closely with you guys to make sure we can open up opportunity to stock fish in the appropriate places, but at the same time not putting these native species at risk. And that is a component that's always going to be a regulatory aspect. But again, I think we've done a really good job of trying to open some of those opportunities up. And I think as this board evolves, hopefully we'll all, you know, have a better understanding of what's been done. And hopefully, like as we've already mentioned, what this needs to look like in the future. The idea of a representation, each person coming back to this committee next time and giving their perspective on where we'd like to see it go, I think will be interesting. Because when I talk to Drew, I'm going to give him just that advice. Try and take a step back as if you were just starting day one. How would you like to see, this change? What can we do on our end to work with industry? And I suspect everyone else will have a little different perspective. Yeah. But I think that's a good approach, a good way.
So the department's description of success in this area is more fishermen and women, better fishing success rates, protection of native species, and avoiding federal oversight of species within the state.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Is that, I mean, does that kind of put it in a ball, or is there other
missing
elements?
I think it does. Is there missing there, Reid?
Okay, and then,
there's just a couple other items that where it's a win-win. When the private sector is thriving, but following the rules and regulations as listed, they provide a good quality fish that's local.
Right.
As soon as you take that element out of Utah, then the demand is still there, and fish will then come in from other states, which increases the risk of disease brought in from other states or AIS from other states. But if we can have a thriving, you know, regulated business,
more local attention,
it decreases the risk of a threat to Utah fisheries from disease and invasive species.
So can we go then? This is your second bullet, Neil, on this agenda you just handed out that you guys were kicking around.
Can I just add one more thing, though? I volunteered for this position for a little different reason. I grow fish, but for a different reason, but that isn't. What one thing that bothered me in the last legislative go, I didn't know a lot about an amended bill or whatever that went through, okay, on behalf of producers, I think. Anyway, but what I did take note of is somehow in the defense of being against the bill, if you will, somehow the rhetoric came up and was used in some way private grown fish all are diseased. Okay? That kind of language was used in the public domain. And there's nothing more public than the Capitol building down there. Okay? I think we all lose. When you hear that kind of language, I don't care whose fish it is, when that kind of language is used, I think manure gets on all of us. You can't say one fish is grown so much different and then in the same breath come over here and say, but all our waters are connected together. You know, so I just wanted to add that example of for me personally saying, hey, there's got to be a better way, because we're all losing if in any way, shape, or form we don't have enough common sense to realize that that's rhetoric and it's just hurting all of us. So trust, though, if there's not trust, then those kind of, symptoms start bubbling up, and who knows exactly where they came from. Maybe that particular person or persons who spoke weren't even invited. I don't know. I don't know all the details. But what I do know, it didn't seem like all entities were saying, well, that's rubbish. So to me, trust means we get a handle on some of these symptoms that make it so that we all thrive together, you know.
Well, we ought to be able to do that. We got the state veterinarian in here, right? So we have the right people sitting at the table. So, Mike, I hope the council would take on what you just said and get everybody's voices on the table while we're here, and there's no sniping or things that happen later that we weren't aware of. Because it sounds like we got people who can speak to. You just had an example of an issue, but the guy can speak to it sitting right there. So those kind of things I hope the council can take on.
Well, since we haven't spoken yet about the Department of Agriculture and Food, which is a whole separate department, I think I kind of feel the way the commissioner does, and that's if there's something in statute or there's something in rule that doesn't make sense and it's been there forever, that's not a reason not to look at it, figure out if it makes sense, and change it if we need to change it. And we've done that over and over since I've been there for 2.5 years. So we're subject to influence and change if it makes sense and it makes common sense, and the reason that we do it, there's a reason behind it. One of the instances, Blue Book. We use a Blue Book in our statutes. If that's not something we should continue to use, you know, we're open for a discussion on what the alternatives are. Do we invent our own Blue Book? What we do, but We also bring the perspective of other states because we are, I'm one of 50 of the National Assembly of Veterinarians. Our state is one of 50 in the National Institute of American Agriculture, also the USAHA, United States Animal Health Association, and all those organizations have aquaculture subcomponents in them. So we meet twice a year a lot of times to discuss nationally what's going on. So the Department of Ag wants to see Utah flourish. They want to see more export, and we deal with export. The reason we use the Blue Book is because so many other states do, and there are the requirements they use for exporting fish out of the state. So there's reasons we do a lot of these things. So I think also the Division of Wildlife Resources has responsibilities. We have responsibilities, and they overlap in some places. And when they do overlap, that's when we need to sit down and discuss what impact it is. If you charge a fee for a pond and we charge a fee for a pond, then probably something's wrong, and one or the other needs to discuss who pays that fee or even if a fee is necessary and why. So since we do have influences in aquaculture in both divisions, then that's why we need to be sitting down and talking and having private industry approach
okay.
us. So my view of success would be more, well, Utah Zone's a prime example. We want to promote within Utah what we raise in Utah. So and that goes for beef, that goes for
plants, corn, everything. So let's go to that second bullet on the sheet then. Status of buying Utah first. I don't know what that is. It sounds like there's been prior conversations about this subject.
Before we leave, it sounds to me, and I may be wrong and just naive, that we need a comprehensive review of the rules and regulations that we have. You know, I don't know them. And
we've done that to our aquaculture health. We've gone, since I've been here, and reviewed and rewritten the entire thing. Some of it's passed, some of it hasn't. So we do that on almost a consistent basis. So, yeah, well, I agree. It's always under review for us, always.
Well, don't we need to review it here and so that we can give a recommendation? I'm not sure I know any of the significant
rules. It might be something we'd want to just take a little bit at a time, just at each agenda or each meeting, we just take one rule and discuss it and decide if maybe it's time for a change or it's time to leave it as is. It would take years to go through it because, you know, we don't want to fill up the agenda too much, but if we just took a little bit of time, I think that's a good idea.
I think that's a good idea, and I think that can be a standing agenda item that we could ask the appropriate agency to give us an overview of those rules or regulations on a specific topic or specific component. I think that's a good idea. We'll all get smarter if we do that.
Mm-hmm. And something else we could possibly do is just give a general overview of the various regulations that apply to aquaculture, public aquaculture, private aquaculture, fee fishing facilities, and who has jurisdiction over what, because Visual Wildlife Resources manages some of them, Department of Agriculture manages others, and maybe not get into the nitty-gritty details of those acts, but to give everybody a kind of an overview of, you know, kind of the big picture.
Okay. A general overview and oversight of regulatory issues in this area, and then maybe take the code or the statutes and break those down into sections, and maybe I think Neil's suggestion might be a real good one of each meeting we take a section and an expert comes, makes us smarter about that section. Lee, that's a good suggestion. Okay, all right, so that was helpful for me just to get my head around the mission and what each of the parties involved here, both public and private, are trying to accomplish. So I've tried to capture this in two sentences. I believe you should capture this stuff really succinctly and then we can all memorize it, and when we get off track, we'll pull ourselves back to it. Create a collaborative environment with private and public interests to improve cooperation and working relationships. Through open dialogue and transparency, create trust and common approaches to successful private and public fisheries. Is that the mission? Now, there'll be objectives under that, but is that our overarching mission? Can everybody say yes, that's why we're here and that's in common to this council? Is everybody okay with that?
Those two sentences? Would you read that one more time?
Yeah. Yep. Create a collaborative, and I'll email this to, once I get email addresses, I'll email this stuff to you. We'll get your input on it. We'll get agendas put together. We'll email those agendas out in advance of the meetings and make sure we have input on them. And so this isn't going to be DeYoung mandating anything. I'm just trying to capture it. create a collaborative environment with private and public interests to improve cooperation and working relationships. Through open dialogue and transparency, create trust and common approaches to successful private and public fisheries. And again, that's what I said, what does success mean? You told me what you think it means. Yep. I heard what we think it means. So I don't want to list all that here, but...
No, exactly what you said. As you go through that, you build objectives underneath
that. We'll have objectives underneath this.
Yeah, very specifically identified.
This is just kind of the overarching theme that the body is going to work toward. Everybody comfortable with that?
Yeah.
Okay, so at least we'll have something in writing which is simple, it's short, it's succinct, and it says this is why we're here. Okay? All right, so can we go to the second bullet on what Mike passed out? Because I think many of you are probably far ahead of me in what this is all about, but status of buying Utah First regarding division's interest in buying privately grown fish. Right now, and I think I just heard, right now the division apparently, I guess, buys fish to supplement the state fisheries planting program. Is that true?
Yeah, we do.
Okay, and you buy fish from where? Out of state as well as in state, just private growers?
We have to follow state purchasing rules.
Sure.
It's like every state.
So you got to go bids and you got to go low bids or whatever. Yeah.
Correct.
Now, everybody's included in that, right?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. It's open to whoever.
Don't you have to be? So let me just ask about that. So when it comes to government contracting and procurement, I know a little bit about that. Don't you have to make it on the procurement list?
You do.
So you got to get on the. You just can't say, why didn't you think of me?
Right.
You got to get on the procurement list. You have to be a qualified or approved supplier.
Right.
Meeting certain state requirements, and then you can be on the list to bid against certain jobs, including stocking fish, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that's pretty common.
Is that on the website? You just get on there?
You can, and we can provide you with all that information if you're not on that list.
Okay,
so then depending on the species and the quantities and whatever, is there any Buy Utah First process in the state now where we say we need to buy 20,000 Bonneville cutthroat, and you know what, we can get so many from Neil, we can get so many from... But we're going to be short in the state, so we're going to look outside. Is there any kind of a process given, or is it just an open bid process?
It's an open bid process. We can try to favor in-state growers by putting certain specifications on there, but we're limited to the extent that we can do that. So we can try to address things like the preference for fish being grown here because they will... maybe grow better,
adapt or disease better to the local,
whatever. I mean, depending on the species. I mean, there's some things that we can do, but it doesn't preclude other bidders from other states putting in. And there's some very competitive aquaculture facilities in Colorado, Idaho.
Yeah, a friend of mine runs one in Star Valley, Wyoming. I spent a night up there and fished his place and went through his whole farm and everything last summer, and it's quite an operation.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he did Utah Fish, but I saw his operation.
Something else is the procurement code also puts heavy, heavy emphasis on the lowest bid. As well.
Right, I understand.
There's some time to you can go above the lowest bid, but
the low bidding, does the low bid in that case include transportation? Because in-state growers should have a competitive advantage.
We can do it either way. It depends. Sometimes we can specify that we will go and pick up the fish. Sometimes it's the delivery. It depends on the quantity of fish and the time of year they're coming and where they need to be.
But that's another way to give an in-state grower a competitive advantage. Is the out-of-state grower has a transportation cost. The state grower doesn't have, right?
Can anybody transport those fish, or do you need a special permit to transport those fish? Or
well, you've got to be licensed to be able to drive those vehicles that transport fish.
Well, okay. Move live fish. Most states have regulations on health certification.
Right.
It's not as restrictive as moving livestock, but there are restrictions.
Okay, so it's obtainable.
Yeah.
How long
actually,
does it
I
take
think,
to get?
Actually, I think on trout, though, I think it's actually more restrictive. Correct me if I'm wrong, but. But the out-of-state growers have to...
You have 30 days.
So if I apply for a permit within 30 days, you're going to get it.
Okay. Mike, you got the floor?
So it's my understanding the out-of-state growers have to comply with the same exact same health standards, not just the certification, but the testing itself as in-state growers. Is that correct?
Of course, I know.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so actually... that affects the cost, I think, more than anything, almost per pound, really. Transportation would be up there, I think.
Okay.
But how do we, one of the things I keep getting asked about is how do we make more transparent what the requirements are? Specifically, trout has been being asked of me. But where do we go to get to understand what the requirements are that a supplier has to be qualified to. Because let me just say this: what I'm being told on the trout side, Mike, how come nobody in state has even been contacted yet with regard to, you know, buying trout? But there's rumors out there saying that out of state growers have been contacted. So again, a nice neat way to kick off this meeting here, I think, is to be able to, because hearsay and conspiracy theory just runs rampant if we don't have the good communication and transparency of these kind of things. But how would we answer that? How do we get it more transparent what the criteria is for the bidding process is, whether you're in state or out of state? How would we do that?
So it sounds like what you're asking is, you know, at least from what you're saying, it sounds like the bidding process is maybe started out of state, and the in-state private growers informed on.
If I listen to a rumor, but I don't want to listen.
So
to
how
a
do you
rumor.
Get?
How
that,
do we get to the?
How
facts?
Do you get that notice out there that says, okay, everybody, including out of state, in state, have equal opportunity to identify it on a website or?
I would be really. I would be really shocked. Just having dealt in government acquisition for 20 years, I would be shocked if on the state's website you can't go find the regulatory section for the acquisition policy associated with.
Well, be
it's
careful,
gotta be.
Well, but Mark, the one thing on this, and that is, this is very, very new. Correct me if I'm wrong, just Randy, but regard to buying in-state trout, if you will, from the division, that is extremely brand new, right?
Well, we have.
Fact is, we haven't, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm not, so be patient with this, because I'm not sure. I don't know. I simply don't know. But that's the point of this council, right?
Mm-hmm. And I've been told a lot of times that there's nothing in my industry either. It's like I have to go to two different departments to get answers. And then when you tell one person you're doing both, they go, oh, we can't do that. You go to the other department, and they say, well, you could do that. You just have to have a permit in both departments.
I mean, I actually heard that from a DNR officer who told me if I call Salt Lake, I get one answer. If I go to my regional office, I get another answer. We're talking fish. And he's the officer who's supposed to be enforcing the law in his pickup truck, and he says, I can call two places and get two answers. So I've heard that even from the guys out there. So it's probably true because it's a big organization and there's lots of agencies. But I understand your point, Mike.
It may not be true. We just need to get to the facts.
Okay.
Yeah. Right? And I mean,
that's the reason it was put on as an agenda item is it wasn't for us to make any decision.
I understand.
And now it was I was hoping Drew is here, or he'll be here at the next one, because he seems to know what's going on as far as purchasing trout, and I was hoping that it would be there to inform us.
Okay.
Is Drew the guy that purchases the trout for the state?
He doesn't necessarily purchase them, but he does identify what our needs are. But like I said, we haven't purchased trout before
yet.
So, and we may in the future, but if it does, it will be handled just like we do all other fish purchases. So it will be on the request for RFP, request for purchase.
So can I ask a question about that? Just the dummy in the room, because again, I'm not in this business, and you all know a lot more. But so the state has fisheries, mm-hmm. and those fisheries have a certain capacity, mm-hmm. and that capacity is managed and harvested and used for planting for public fishing or whatever purpose. I assume mainly public fishing if it's a state
all
fishery,
right?
Okay, yeah. All public fishing. And then you supplement that capacity, mm-hmm. by buying capacity by species or whatever from outside growers that come into the state to supplement the state's own capacity, right?
Correct.
And did I just hear that all of the procurement of excess beyond capacity is done from out-of-state growers?
No. In-state growers.
There are in-state growers that you're buying from right now that are supplementing the capacity of the fisheries for the public planting. Okay. So we have been buying fish
in-state.
From growers in state.
Yes.
Yeah. But not trout.
But not trout.
We're able to produce all of the trout that we've needed, so we've not had to buy.
Oh, so let me define my question better then. Thank you. So we have not been buying out of state trout.
We have not bought
either.
Trout.
Oh, okay, I got it. Thank you.
In fact, haven't we been chastised by the audit for producing too many trout?
We, at one time, were producing more trout than we needed. We were actually stocking more fish than we needed. So we reduced the production in trout. We've actually closed one hatchery because we don't need the capacity at this point.
So that's where the warm water species, the money that's been set aside to purchase fish has been geared towards what we do need, and that's it's more warm water species. The wipers.
Okay, so the rumor out there that says there's a specific dollar amount earmarked specifically for trout, that's a rumor.
There was intent language at this last legislative session that we buy some trout, and there was a dollar figure that was attached to that. We have not done anything. That was at this last legislative session. So
that's an interesting.
So that's not actually a rule. That's not actually, that didn't pass.
Well, the intent language is there in the legislation. So we will do. We will honor that. We will buy some trout this coming year.
Oh, okay.
From the local.
But that must be what. Okay, so that
will be. That's always a challenge.
You got to follow the state's acquisition.
This is what we don't know. This is why we're here. Yeah.
Okay, so there is some foundation, if you will, to the rumor. Okay.
Yes, yeah, so that's very helpful. So that was very helpful for me. Maybe you all knew that. But that was really helpful for me to get that cleared up.
Well, then our income source isn't just from all private. It could be from government, too, which makes growing fish more, motivational, right? Maybe in theory. Yeah. Okay.
Does the state ever do a make-buy analysis on the fisheries operations to do a make-buy? Are we better off running fisheries versus are we better off buying from fisheries?
Yes.
How often do you do like make-buy on that?
There are audits that are done about every 5 years.
Okay.
So, in fact, we're looking at one right now. We're going through and analyzing all of our hatcheries, looking at costs of production. I mean, it varies, across each. Some hatcheries are more efficient than others, and that's one of the reasons we closed one was, you look at efficiencies.
Okay, so just so I get my head around this again, so on this Buy Utah First item that was here, if we public and private decide we truly wanted to buy Utah First, it sounds to me like that would be making a legislative amendment to the state's acquisition policy to give preferential treatment to Buy Utah First, which could be done by the legislature if they wanted to.
Well, it already
has,
apparently.
There was intent language.
I heard
to
intent
buy
language.
Fish.
I've never heard it went to buy Utah first.
No, it did not go to Utah first. Okay. So we'll have to go through state purchasing.
Right.
Those, we will buy trout, but we can't guarantee where they're going to come from.
Right.
So in other words, the legislature. I'm not trying to be funny. But
no, I'm just.
So the legislature, in a sense, made a make or buy decision.
Yep.
Okay, I mean,
but it's all new too
at the same
time.
That doesn't that is what's happened here, right? Now, how you guys justify that spending, you'll have to put it out on competitive bid. And what I'm hearing is inside a state doesn't have preferential, out of outside
a
state.
We've
right?
lost a lot of autonomy on purchasing, on IT, on a lot of other things that the state has taken over. IT specifically is horrendous now because the state runs it, and we don't have any autonomy at all to run it by department. When we did have autonomy to run it by department, we could buy things off the shelf. We could do other things. Right now, I think it costs $120 to hook a computer up. So the state is charging us now because the state runs IT. State also runs purchasing. When I want to buy something that I know that only a certain company produces, I still have to go through the process of writing it up, get a request for purchase, and then go through the process, even though we know there's only one entity that produces product that we want.
Fair enough. So fair enough. There is a rumor out there. I think I'm more educated.
Yeah. Sure.
Some advantageous to put that as an agenda item to have Rory or Wade or somebody explain this to us, to educate the industry.
Yeah, so when we get through with this discussion, we'll come back, because I think what we're doing right here is we're creating the agenda for next meeting, right? So we've got process of acquisition for fish by DNR. I'd like to see that maybe next time. I think you would. General overview of oversight regulation, right? We talked about that. There was some suggestion maybe we could get an overview of the regulatory environment and how that's managed. So maybe that's a good agenda item for next time as well, because part of this, since it's inaugural, part of this is we all have to get a lot smarter.
That's what will keep it running good.
Okay, any other comments on that item, so the third item, which Mike, you asked that we just chat about a little bit, of suggestions for the council, is this idea of the core approval process much quicker. It was interesting, it's quicker. You didn't say easier, you didn't say simpler, you say quicker.
And Just one thing real quick here. This isn't me saying this was a group of growers who kind of I just said, hey, rather than just everybody chime enough individually.
Let's just say the association had these thoughts.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm surprised the association said quicker instead of simpler, easier, less complicated, less cumbersome.
You weren't there, Mark.
I know. Oh. So quicker encompasses all those things, is that what you're saying, Mark?
Understand. I had a red pen and jotted on graph paper, and I came back and printed this up. It's a placeholder.
Okay.
It's for discussion. If quicker, why do you say you're surprised about that? Because maybe
because typically government regulatory issue becomes quicker when you make it simpler. And the way you get to quicker is not say let's make it quicker. The way you get to quicker is you say let's make it less complex and simpler.
I like that.
That's all I'm getting at.
Yeah, but it also sometimes means it's more expensive to make it quicker.
That's right.
Less expensive, it's slower. So I've encountered that also.
I think what I was, so again, the beauty of what's going on here is we have private pond ownership entities here now, okay, around the table. So what we were hearing was it just seems to take a long time. Well, it's not for me to actually speak to it. I mean,
how long does it
guys,
take?
Well, I don't understand. Can we back up just
all
one
right,
minute?
All right, I heard the comment from a guy that has a private pond, and he's certified, and he said it took him up to 2 years before he could get a permit to be able to transport his fish from one location to another.
But that's a rumor, right?
Well, that was what he told, right, a rumor, essentially. That's what he told me. Well, I'm a guy trying to get into the business, so when I heard that, I thought, 2 years, oh my gosh. Is that true?
Was he moving live fish?
From yes.
See, there's multiple CORs, because that then moves in.
I was just going to say, COR is not a COR.
Exactly. So if
I just get a COR from
fish,
it, I've
got to know what color fish you're talking about.
See, that's all information that we need to know.
Yeah, so when you say COR, for a guy like me, who's just a fisherman.
I just thought it was one.
I planted my private pond. I had a DNR officer come up. He took photographs of it. He looked at it. I filled out an application. I took my $20 in, and 5 weeks later, I had my core. Maybe 4 weeks later, I had my core. It wasn't bad.
And what did that permit you, that
first core? It permitted me to plant fish and harvest fish from my private pond under the regulations that are carried out by the state for all fishermen.
Okay.
No special regulations. And it was quick. It was weeks.
For 5 years, right?
For 5 years.
A private pond that grows live fish and tries to move them and sell them.
That's a different ballgame.
That's an aquaculture facility.
Is that a different core permit called a core two?
Yeah, that comes from the Department of Ag and Food. It's a certificate of registration from our office.
So the only point I'm making is a core is not a core is not a core. My core is probably the simplest one to get. Yours may be the most complex.
Well, that's what I was just trying to figure out is, okay, so let's. So if I want to move vegetables off my land and go sell them at a stand or sell them to the Stokes grocery store down the street, and do I need to have an ag permit and a core permit to be able to do both?
Well, you just mentioned two completely different things. Putting them in a retail establishment and selling them at a farmer's market.
That's the difference.
Two completely different things.
So, I think one thing Marty talked about earlier was a broad overview of the rules. I think when we get into that, that would be very helpful to understand what CORs you need for certain situations.
What is a private pond versus a fee?
Yeah, what is an open waterway? What is what constitutes open waters? Closed waters and those types of things.
Yeah, because I was surprised even on my core. I thought I was getting a private pond. My core didn't come back as a private pond.
What did come back?
My core came back as a, I'd have to read it.
Private stocking.
Private stocking pond, which is different because now I have to abide by all the limit regulations, fishing regulations, season regulations, and I'm scratching my head and saying, this is a contained pond. Why am I? I'm going to put 100 fish in there, but my grandkids can only catch 6.
Yeah.
So I get that there's differences. Yeah.
Okay, so that's what we're trying to simplify. So this body does have a very strong importance with just understanding where we're breaking rules and where we're not.
And these histories go back pertaining to waterways and to diseases and to native species.
Yeah,
so a lot of things influence why we do what we do.
Once you understand what you guys are trying to protect from, then being in compliance is a lot easier.
Right.
Because don't put your fish, don't have a live feed going into a river off your property because one of your fish may get out and get into that river and then float down into the lake. And next thing you know, that fish is breeding with other fish and what you had that was native is now destroyed. And
I guess Asian carp would be a good example.
Asian carp, kill those suckers, literally suckers, right? Okay, so maybe that's another interesting agenda item would be that overview of core types and regulations or controls on core types, maybe. And that gets to this thing again, this third.
For what the person's trying to achieve. So if I'm not trying to move live fish off my property, if I'm going to kill them on my property, throw them in my ice chest box, and take them down to the local
Chinese restaurant and they're going to buy, you know, 300 head of fish from me a week or say something like that, then the first core permit is legit for that. But if I want to take live fish, throw them in my truck in a cooler with a little air pump in there and I'm cruising down the road, I'm breaking the law.
It's a possibility.
What complicates this is the two divisions or two agencies, because what you talked about were two situations where one's a Department of Ag issue and one's a Division of Wildlife issue. So,
okay.
But if you sell them to a restaurant, there is another permit. You do have to.
That's regulatory services. It's a different division.
Agriculture regulates versus wildlife. Agriculture regulates the commercial side of aquaculture. So fee fishing facilities mean you're charging people to come and fish on privately stocked fish. Aquaculture, you're growing live fish to sell them. And then Division of Wildlife Resources, private ponds means you're stocking a private pond for no commercial purpose. You can't charge people to come and fish it. If you do, then it becomes a fee fishing facility.
Right.
Private stocking is just another method, because ponds cannot be, no aquaculture facility can be on a natural stream channel by state statute. And so in order to facilitate
No
aquaculture facility, fee fishing facility, or private pond can be on a natural stream channel. It's been in our state law for decades and decades. And I mean,
and then we have to define natural stream channel.
Yeah, no, we tried to make some changes last year in statute. I shouldn't say we tried to. We did make changes in statute and rule to redefine and try to create some exceptions for that natural stream channel restriction. And I won't go into the details of that now, but we've done a number of things trying to work it. But the easy thing to remember is if you're doing something with fish that involves making money off it, it's going to be agriculture.
Okay. So I think our meeting in June is going to be a Get Smart meeting. And there'll be a lot of Get Smart meetings, I think, over the next few years. But,
yeah.
I mean, our real opportunity to have any advice will be in preparation and around that August time frame. So I would suggest we use June for these general topics and try and bring us all up to speed. So let me back up what I've heard so far in the context of trying to think about what we want to do next time we all get together. So overview of core types and controls and agency oversight. That seems like that's a common question everybody has. Process of acquisition for fish by the state. What is that process? How is it controlled? Where do we find the regulations? How is it authorized? What are the, give us training maybe on that, right? A broad overview of oversight and regulation of aquaculture and private fisheries. I think that was something else we talked about. So we have the core, which is unique, then a broad overview, then an acquisition review, so we can all get smarter on how that works. Those are the top three things I've heard so far. Others that maybe don't fit in those buckets that we want to make sure next time we get together.
Unless we just want to pick a rule and add to it. We tried to keep it simple. We don't want to keep you here too long in your meetings, but and we haven't heard from the division or the department of whether they have agenda items, but also.
Well, we have because they're sitting on the table, right?
Okay.
They're on the council.
But if they want to throw something out too to add to it, but anything in addition. Or if we want to just...
We can pick a rule. There's no doubt about that. Now, we can pick a rule for next time, which might be a good way for us, again, to get smart. We talked about that earlier. I'm certainly good with that, so let's add that. I have no idea.
In my experience with associations versus being on a board, though, typically, just so you know, the association usually does that kind of homework.
Okay.
And reviews the rules and regulations. Then where there's questions, you prioritize those to bring it to this kind of forum for further clarification. That way, you know, we've kind of at least screened it first, rather than expecting this board to go through all of statute paragraph by paragraph. I mean, you can if we want, but typically associations do that, right? If I'm not mistaken, that's what typically happens.
So does the council feel the need to have specific statutory review? I think what Mike is suggesting, if I understand Mike correctly, is maybe the council, with our mission, doesn't have to go specifically through statute language. Maybe we go through these broader educational areas to get us smarter in the general process, and then we'll address those things specifically as they arise.
As they arise, and as the association has specific...
If they've got something that's pressing, that's costing them money, they got something pressing that they want to change that would help them out,
then that's what we should address, the critical mass, what right now is important to them.
You know,
that's my thought.
Probably I'd have to check with the boss and Rory, but I'd be willing to volunteer to put together a summary packet of the rules, you know, the statutes and rules that may come into play prior to our next meeting, if that would be a benefit to the council.
I see a lot of advantages in doing that.
I agree. Just showing different areas of authority.
Yeah, I'm all for that. I think that's a good idea. And we could email that out in advance. It doesn't necessarily, it doesn't necessarily have to be an agenda item. You could mail it in advance, read ahead materials, and then questions could be asked in the meeting pertaining to what you provided if we want.
Yep.
Everybody okay with that?
Actually, I move that we add that to the agenda. There's a summary. I think that's fantastic.
We'll check with
that's
going to save us. He's got to pay the bill.
We're paying the bill. But really, I mean, I think that's going to save us a lot of time here and get to the questions quicker. As opposed to, I mean, that's what your skill is.
I've learned a lot just by being here today because I didn't realize that the different permitting for different things. You know, that was the biggest question of concern for me is with what I'm trying to do, what it feels like I'm always, you know, breaking a law. Once you start finding out what the laws are, it's like, oh my gosh, I should have never even started this. Well, that really takes away from the whole creativity of go do something nobody else has done and look at what we can do with it.
Please don't think you're all by yourself, because we deal with that on a daily basis.
That's
especially in livestock industry, poultry, and everything else that we cover. So don't feel all alone. Sometimes you can't research it all until you start it, and then you find out.
Right. So people getting together.
Some of it's deal breaker. Some of it's not.
Right. Okay.
But on the flip side, when people do know the facts, a lot of times that's when creativity really does kick in, because conspiracy theory doesn't consume everybody's energy.
Right.
And we can help with that.
When you know the facts, you know how to navigate and come up with something.
Well, and at my place of work, I got a lot of bad information before I even came here. I mean, they were telling me, you know, you're going to be fined $10,000, and they're going to kill all your fish, and I'm coming here, and I'm going, these people aren't trying to do that to me.
No.
So that's a misconception in itself. Not to say it couldn't happen. I guess if you get somebody mad at you, but at the same time.
Honestly, we're here to help you. I mean, I don't know any other way to say it, but
right.
We're not here to do any, you know, put anybody out of business for any reason.
Okay. So let me back up one more time again. In context of, so we all can leave today with an agenda for June. Overview of core types and controls, process of acquisition by the state for fish, how that's governed, what the rules, regulations are, how it's been practiced, what the opportunity would be, and what might be required for a Buy Utah opportunity. This overview of rules and regulations that are pertinent to governing the council's area of authority in aquaculture and private ponds. What else for next time that you really want to spend some time on and talk about?
That's a pretty big agenda right there.
And that's huge compared to what we've
To me, I think it's enough,
past.
But I don't want to
we got years at this, taking our time is really important.
Yeah.
So who's going to go over? Did you want to assign someone to?
Yeah, first I want to agree that these are the three things. Okay. And then Greg's already volunteered for, I think, what will be one of these things. And I'll get with Stacy and we can see, you know, well, we can do it right now. We can see who's best to present this. I'd like to get as much read-ahead material as we can. I hate going to a meeting, I assume you do, and you're trying to read all the material while someone's trying to tell you what it all says. I'd rather get it in advance. We come here, we've seen it, we've read it, we talk about it.
Yeah.
So overview of CORE. The COR types and controls and restrictions, who's the best person to do that for the council to present that?
You're going to have two different perspectives. You got CORs from DWR and you got CORs from Department of
Ag. That's good to know.
Greg, I would prefer a focus more on those that are the ponds that are in stream, because that's fairly new to the industry. It wasn't that long ago where you could not stock in stream, but now you can. And so there seems to be a little bit of confusion there that would, if you put a little focus on that, it would be great.
Definitely.
Okay, so Greg.
Barry, would Anna be a good person to
She would almost be the only person.
Yeah.
Anna Forrest is our aquaculture specialist.
I mean, we could address the big picture issues, the laws. Day-to-day operations and how you function with your CORs, Greg and I aren't going to know much about. But if we're just looking at an overview of who has what authority.
And we'll come up with the same thing you do the best we can as an overview of what Department of Ag.
So that would be the first agenda, then we can get that. Greg can spearhead that. And we can decide how Anna wants to play into that if we need to, and we can focus on where the biggest confusion or issues might be, which could be this in-stream. I'm good with all that. Sounds like everybody is good with that. The second one was process of acquisition. I'm sure the department has someone who's an acquisition specialist or someone who's knowledgeable.
We'll have someone here for that.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure exactly who it will be at this point, but I'll have someone.
Okay. And then the third one is this general overview of rules and regulations governing public and private fisheries. It's this much, much broader view. It's not CORs. It's a much broader.
We'll probably put together large bullets that cover it, and without getting into too much detail.
So you guys want to just collaborate?
We can collaborate on that. And get that out in advance of the next meeting.
So ag and... Yeah. Can present that. Is there anything that needs to be presented from the public side? Is there anything that you want to hear from the private side at the next meeting? I mean, part of this is to create a collaborative environment. We've tasked the state now with a lot. Tell us about this, tell us about this, tell us about this. Is there anything that you want to hear in the next council meeting from the private side?
Yeah, what's the private fisherman? What are you guys looking for from the guy growing private fish? Just healthy, clean fish that are not, you know, integrated with other natural, you know, something out of state and integrated with something in state, and then we got a hybrid fish that don't make sense. I mean, those are all worries I could see.
It doesn't make any difference to us what the fish are as long as we can catch them. we don't really care where they come from. But I'll tell you a big thing that worries all of us, the fishermen, or many fishermen, is this disease problem. And I remember back when we had the whirling disease problem, I'd hate something like that to start again. That would affect fishing from a fisherman's standpoint probably more than anything. Other than that,
catch some fish and make you sick.
We're a little concerned about. There seems to be a shift in fishing from cold water fish, trout, to warm water fish. And we're a little concerned about the steps and that's going on and how to protect that particular area going on.
What do you think, Stry? I'm just curious on that. I've got a brother who's like, and my son, they're fantastic fishermen. They are river run through it fishermen, fly fishermen. They tie in their own lures. They're catching all this stuff. My brother is doing exactly what you said. For whatever reason, now he's going to Yuba Lake, and whatever reason, and he's always been a trout fisherman. So what do you think is driving that? Is it success rates? Is it just it's a different species? Is it the fish
different
are bigger?
Different species, I think, just a different challenge and stuff.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And that's perfect. I mean, I think we're always going to be a trout state. I think most fishermen here love to catch a rainbow trout. But if you've ever eaten a walleye, you would throw rocks at rainbows.
I'm telling you, I lived in Minnesota 5 years, and walleye are that and halibut are the best fish.
I was going to say, one other interest that ought to be in common with everybody here, and Rory touched on this, is the Endangered Species Act listing. We've got two native cutthroat trout species in the state. Both have been petitioned to list as endangered or threatened before. Successfully averted that by the active programs we've had to reestablish native cutthroat waters, you know, through poisoning out non-natives and eliminating the threats. And I mean, this is a big one, is the escapement of fish that might hybridize or outcompete our native cutthroat trout species. If it was ever listed, all management authority over those species goes to the federal government. They can curtail how you manage your land. They could tell you what kind of fish you can have in your private pond, because if they escape, they could threaten or endanger. I mean, it would be a much more tighter regulatory scheme. So One thing that we all ought to have a common interest is keeping regulation in the hands of the state and not the federal government.
I support species that.
Well, one of the things, too, is that I'd hate to suffer more problems like we had at Red Fleet, where we had to kill it because we had a species of fish that was in endangerment to the Green River. That took basically Red Fleet out of a fishing opportunity, which, and those of you who've been to Red Fleet, it's a beautiful place to go to, that takes it out of operation really for good fishing for 3 or 4 years. We need to avoid things like that.
Mistakes.
Is there anything else from the private fishery side that the state agencies would like to have prepared and presented, or are we good with this agenda as it is? I'm not hearing anything, so I think we must be good.
I think this is a pretty good starting point. I think those questions are going to be asked once everyone sits down at the table again and we cover all this information on the rules and regulations and we really start working as a group to identify how we benefit both programs. All right. I really think that'll come out.
All right, well, good. So our next meeting is scheduled for June 5th at 9 a.m. Stacy will let us know the where, maybe a different conference room, but in this building so everybody can plan to be here. And you'll let us know the where. And then the reading materials, any idea how far in advance of June 5th we might be able to see some of these materials from these three agenda points?
You give me a deadline.
At a minimum, I'd like to at least post them 2 weeks prior to your meeting.
Yeah, I was going to say minimum's 2 weeks, I think. Give us at least 2 weeks prior so everybody has a chance to read through them and make notes and be prepared. Our meetings will be so much better.
Would there be an interest in having all of the pertinent statutes and rules that apply to these activities included and then a summary sheet? So if you wanted to look at it, you could actually read the regulations.
I think that would be great. Yeah. I know I went out and plowed through all those regulations myself when I was just doing this ranch pond and read through them, and you know it was interesting, but it'd be nice to have somebody pull them all together, and that'd be awesome. And we don't want to task you guys with a ton of work. We just want to get enough support to be effective.
But as we're out on the street, we have it, and we're your ambassadors.
Well, we can correct a lot of the rumors as we learn this. That's right. No, that's not correct. This is exactly how this works.
That's right.
And that helps to take off the government's controlling everything you're doing, Senator. We got to get that out of people's heads.
Or it might clarify it, but let's have the facts.
At least
All right, Stacey, anything else you need to cover before we break up?
No, just a few points of interest. So I'd like to post this by May 22nd. Right. Those of you who have assignments, if you want to give me your documents by then. And by post it, I mean the committee will get an email with the attachments. They'll probably be large, so Google Drive is probably how they're going to
Those will be PDFs, I assume?
Yes, we'll send them as PDFs. They will be posted on the Utah Public Notice website. So if you go on that website and search Private Aquaculture Advisory Council, you will find all of the meeting dates plus the audio, all of that kind of stuff will be attached there. Also, if you go onto the wildlife.utah.gov website, you'll see there's a section where it talks about boards and councils, and we've got a section for the Wildlife Board, we've got a page for the Regional Advisory Councils, and you will also see a page for the Private Aquaculture Advisory Council now. So your contact information will be listed on there as well if any members of the public have comments they'd like to send to you. We will also post all meeting agendas there. And I'm thinking we'll also do a couple of links to the rules that strictly play in your field. So if a member of the public were to go in and look, that would be their best place to see everything that you guys are seeing.
Let me ask you a question about what you just said. So when you said that the council's contact information will be posted on the public website, is that our email?
It's your email.
Yes. Not my cell phone.
No.
Please.
Unless you want.
No.
Home address.
I don't give my cell phone to anybody. So the last thing I want to do is post it. Okay. So
no,
it'll be
your email. And so if you, as we spoke earlier in the meeting, want an email specifically for this, then you need to get me that in the next few days. Otherwise, I'll use the one that you have placed on this.
All right. Well, I've got another one.
So wildlife.utah.gov, Private Aquaculture Council, it'll be a tab.
Well, wait a minute.
It won't be.
Well, let's time out on that. Let's time out on that. Make this a lot easier. Stacey, why don't you just, when you send us the email with the contact information, just send us the links. Just send us the links to the site. We don't have to be trying to remember if we got that right. You just send us the links and we can go to it, right?
So, and it'll take outreach a couple of days to build the page and put everything on it. So I won't see it going live until next week, which means if you want to change your email address, have it to me by Monday. and I'll fix it.
Yeah, I don't care.
I'll change mine too.
Just take whatever you want.
All right. So does that sounds okay? I'm going to make these meetings as transparent as possible. Right. That's my job.
Awesome.
Here,
so you'll send out the contact list, so all council members have the contact information for all of the council members.
Yes.
When you do that, you'll send out the links to the sites you just described that are available to us, right?
Yes. So when I send you the agenda on May 22nd, that's when you'll see all the attachments for the documents that'll be connected to it.
Okay. Mike, when you get through with that, I'm going to put a different email address on it too. I've got another one I'll use for that.
Mark, you already have solar. I was just thinking you wanted to protect from the solar salesman.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
That's worse than
does
that.
Anybody still have these that they need to get to me?
I've
got a couple of them.
You don't have to have one.
Do you have to turn them in?
If you don't want reimbursement, I just need you to write on there, I'm not requesting reimbursement.
So
that when I'm audited, I can...
Can I give you a blanket? I'm not requesting reimbursement for the whole year. Do I have to do one every time?
You do not have to do one every time.
So mine's for the year, so just put that on there.
So I slept at my house and I drove up here today. Do I qualify for that?
I will not pay you $25.
We appreciate your support.
You sleep on the couch.
You know what I mean? Well, not tonight, but I've had my days. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Appreciate you being here. Thank you very much. Look forward to it. We'll see you next time,
Mark.
June 5th. Thanks. Meeting is adjourned.